Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, greetings from the Gulf Coast of Florida. This is a beautiful day out there. I'm just listening to the birds singing outside my window. This is really kind of cool. So it's gorgeous here, you know, having a wonderful time. I guess the rest of the country is kind of thawing out. At least they should by now, even up in Minnesota. And who knows what's going on in Fairbanks, Alaska. It's always cold up there. It was there in the summertime. It was like 50 degrees. People are like, oh, this is a great day. It's 50 degrees. Really? Okay, fine. You know, being a Florida person now, it's kind of wild. So the good news is we have people today. It's not just me. So I'm really excited about that. I put that in the live chat. So I only have half an hour to myself. So I got to get to, there's a lot of stuff I want to get to. So I'll cover that. But we got Derek Park at the bottom of the hour. We have Rebecca Charles, who's coming back. And she's going to be a regular. We're going to start a report probably next Wednesday with her. She's in a website. She's the one who lost her daughter to the hospital. Death by Hospital Protocol is her website. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to get probably Steve Sharabek, who lost his daughter Grace. Danielle is Rebecca's daughter. And we have another guest who's coming on with her, Marie Clark. And so we're going to talk to her as well. And so that's going to be the second hour. And the third hour, we've got Cowgirl Candace coming back to talk to us about horses and nature and, you know, whatever else is on her mind and things that she's discovered. And so it's going to be fun. It's going to be an interesting day today. And it's great for Friday. I mean, you know, horse ride. I mean, you can't go wrong with horse riding. And, of course, it's fun to talk money and everything else is happening. And, of course, a very serious topic. It's more of a Wednesday than a Friday topic just because Fridays, you know, like everybody else, I like to lighten up, have a little fun. It's the weekend. You know, it's time to go out and do stuff. So being me, you know, where politics is my sport, is my recreation, unlike most of you folks that take it very seriously, I'm telling you, if you don't treat it as a game, you're going to go crazy. So to me, politics is a game. Legislation is a game. It's one big game, and I just intend to win the game. That's all. So I'm going to go take a run out to Representative Matt Gaetz' new office in Crestview and go chat and say hi, you know, ask him why they're not coming on the show. And, you know, are they going to sponsor, you know, vaccine product legislation, liability legislation? And are they going to sponsor, you know, legislation to end censorship by big tech and, you know, our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money and to disarm all the federal bureaucrats and give the guns back to American people, you know, and some of the other things we have, an end to prescription drug advertising, you know, just little things like that I want to talk to him about. And I want to get him back on the show. I mean, he used to be on my show. I played my last interview with Matt Gaetz back in 2018. But since they don't answer my phone calls and they don't answer my emails, I have to go see him in person and say, hey, guys, remember me? Because I don't go away. You know, I'm not nasty. I'm not insistent. I'm not, maybe a little insistent, but I'm certainly not aggressive in any of this. I just, you know, keep knocking on the door. Hey, I'm here. You know, we've got the solutions here. We know how to fix the problems. You know, why are you wasting your time talking about it and complaining to everybody? Because like, and this is the frustrating part for me. We've got the answers to the problems. We know we do. You know, we have the answers. We have the solutions. I don't know if people are more afraid of the solutions, whether they think they're just too simple, or whether there's some kind of weird thing going on that if they solve the problems, they somehow won't have a job. You know, is it job security? In other words, if crime disappeared, you know, would we need police? You know, and I wonder about that. That's why they want to take the guns away. This is why chiefs of police, well, politically maybe, you know, there's certain folks in law enforcement that want to get rid of all the guns from the honest law-abiding citizen, even though they're sworn to uphold to keep the guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens anyway. Somehow there's like this weird thing that if people can protect themselves, you know, why do they need the police? And I wonder that sometimes, you know, with the politicians and the do-gooders and the nonprofits and all these other organizations, if suddenly the problems are solved, are they going to get their grant money? I don't know. I mean, I don't have grant money, so I don't worry about that. I wish I did. Like I say, I could change the world on what the Heritage Foundation spends on their luncheons. So, but that's another story. All right, a couple of big things in the news. Well, anyway, I'll let you know Monday what happens with my little Matt Gaetz thing. I'll probably post a Facebook video too, like a before and after. You know, before I leave and after I visit them, we'll see what. So that'll be sometime today. So the two big things in the news, and they're both fairly recent. One is an article by Peter Navarro on how Fox completely screwed up, how they surrendered to Dominion and the deep state, and they surrendered to the lie that that the election was fair and free and all that other kind of nonsense, which of course it wasn't. You know the old saying, the truth will set you free? Well, in Fox's case, it's literally true. The truth would have set them free of $787 million in basically surrender money that they're paying so they don't have to tell the truth. So that's what Fox is really doing. Fox is paying Dominion so that Fox doesn't have to tell the truth, that they don't have to have their people tell the truth, that they don't, they're not going to be embarrassed by the truth, you know, in front of all their leftists, their deep state people, and everybody else. So that's kind of fascinating. The other thing is a whistleblower has come forward. Isn't it amazing how many whistleblowers? See, the whistleblowers are the decent people in government. See, there are decent people in government. There just aren't enough of them, that's all. But and they don't rise to power. They usually, are in middle management positions, and they don't get any further because they're decent people in government. So what we need to do is take the whistleblowers and put them in charge of the administration, put them in charge of just entire departments, put them in cabinet positions. That's what I would do with whistleblowers. Is anybody that's that gutsy to come forward and talk about all the problems? You know, this whistleblower, the senior agent investigator at the IRS, I put them in charge of the IRS. I said, okay, your job is to clean out all the people that stopped you from doing what you intended to do properly. I mean, that's how you handle it. That's what Trump should do. He should take the whistleblowers and make them, the cabinet. So there's a couple articles on that. So let's just start on that. That's probably the more direct of the two. The other thing, Fox has already happened, so it's kind of old news, but it's good to know just how bad it is. So let's start with the article, April 19th. Patriots Day, the day that everybody forgot, where the headline in the New York Post, which is doing wonderful work on this and Hunter Biden and everything else, IRS whistleblower alleges cover-up of Hunter Biden tax evasion in bombshell letter to Congress. Now, of course, the real question is, what's Congress going to do with this? Anything? Nothing? You know, we'll see. Apparently, when Marjorie Taylor Greene, calls Mayorkas a liar, even the Republicans say, well, that's kind of harsh. Maybe you should retract those comments. And then you hear the commentary on the news. Will the gentle lady from Georgia retract her comments? And then she says, no, I won't. Good for her. All right. So April 19th, a couple of days ago, IRS whistleblower, New York Post, written by, where's my author here? Stephen Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N, who says, Washington, an IRS whistleblower has informed Congress that he wants to come forward to reveal a cover-up in the tax evasion investigation focused on first son Hunter Biden, according to a letter obtained by the Post. I wonder how they got it. Well, obviously the whistleblower gave it to him, or somebody in Congress did. Anyway, it says a lawyer for the official told a group of congressional committee leaders Wednesday that he wants to expose preferential treatment and false testimony to Congress by a senior political appointee. That senior political appointee is Merrick Garland, the attorney general, who was the number three in the Justice Department during the Waco massacre under Janet Reno. So Merrick Garland is well-versed in terrorism, domestic security stuff, internal security, KGB tactics, and things like that. If you learn from Janet Reno, you learn from the best in terms of killing people and not caring, being a total psychopath that she was. I know she's a psychopath. I mean, she sat there in Congress just like Mayorkas does. They must all go to the same psychopath school. You know, the school for government psychopaths, where you learn how to remove your conscience, how to say things that you know are untrue, how to do it in a way that you could pass a lie detector test without emotion, how to look smugly, down upon Congress, who is your boss, who does have oversight over you, not care, and kill people at will and feel good about it and get a good night's sleep. I mean, that's what these people do. You look at Janet Reno, you look at Merrick Garland, you look at Eric Holder, those are the three people who are most directly involved in the Waco massacre. Back in 1993, Janet Reno was the attorney general. Eric Holder was deputy, and Merrick Garland was assistant deputy. 1, 2, 3. And guess what? They all ended up as attorney general. Isn't that fascinating? So the training for attorney general is that you massacre a certain amount of American citizens, not care about it, and advance. And that's if you're in the Democrat Party, that's how you get to be attorney general. A long, distinguished list of murderers, mayhem, internal security people, KGB types, and things like that. Oh, I'm sure to get a knock at my door on that comment. It's okay. I expect it. It's going to happen one day, anyway. So, but I don't care. I'm still going to say what I say because you have to. Can't let these people intimidate you. Anyway, so this is a lawyer for the official told a group of congressional committee leaders Wednesday that he wants to expose preferential treatment. Okay, well, this is going to be good. So how come the hearing isn't scheduled, Congress? This hearing should have been scheduled already. The minute this made the news April 19th, by April 20th, which was yesterday, this hearing should have been scheduled for Monday. But they haven't done it yet. Weenies, See, weenies in Congress, let's schedule this hearing. Let's get this. I want this is, and this has to be televised. I want this out in the public. We need to hear all about this. Anyway, it says an unnamed whistleblower is a career IRS criminal supervisory special agent who has been overseeing the ongoing and sensitive investigation of a high-profile controversial subject since early 2020. Excuse me. Well, with that kind of description, is there anybody that doesn't know who this is already? Everybody in the IRS knows who this is. The person that the person who's doing this is the one person who's been complaining to their coworkers at the IRS. I mean, everybody. I guarantee you, everybody in the IRS knows who this is. I think most people in Congress know who this is. I know the Brandon insurrection knows who it is. You know, they're probably planning to do a Hillary on him or her. I mean, you don't know if it's him or her. I shouldn't assume. But let's you know, I mean, I hope they've got Secret Service protection. I hope Trump's already protected this person. You know, I hope they're living in Mar-a-Lago. You know, because they need to be able to. It's like you see all those police shows, you know, where they have to get the witness at the last minute to court before the mafia or whatever organized crime gang kills them. Well, this is the same kind of situation. You know, we got to get this person in front of the TV cameras before the deep state deep sixes them. All right, so this is what we need to have happen. Anyway, so attorney Mark Lytle, Lytle, or Lytle, was on CBS News. And so they actually did a good report on it, which everybody else has copied. This is, although Hunter, 53, just scary he's that old, you know, isn't named in the letter, a congressional source confirmed the complaint pertains to the first son, I've never heard him characterized that way, but I guess that's true, who reportedly borrowed about $2 million last year to pay off his tax bill assessed on income earned overseas. So he earns millions of dollars. He doesn't put any of it into, you know, his quarterly estimates and his payments. So he has to borrow $2 million. If you have to borrow $2 million just to pay your taxes, how much money did you make? There's a question for you right there, right? Anyway, it says Lytle did not immediately respond to the Post request for comment, but in an interview with CBS Evening News said that his client has worked at the IRS more than a decade and has extensive documentation. So obviously, this, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be, how hard do you think it is to find a person when they've already described them in that much detail? How many supervisors have been there over 10 years who are investigating Hunter Biden, who are complaining about the fact that they can't get things done and who are disgruntled already and have said something to coworkers? One person, and that's the whistleblower. So that's why they need whistleblower protection. They should have gotten the protection before they started, you know, anyway. Back to the article. An IRS whistleblower claims in a letter to Congress that there was a cover-up of Hunter Biden's alleged tax evasion at the agency. Well, of course there was. There's a cover-up of everything Hunter Biden does. He's protected. You know, we are not. He is. Anyway, it says, because the things he's been through are very well documented in emails and other communications with Department of Justice. So that's the last place you want to document stuff is the Department of Justice, because just like the manifesto from the transgender murderer of the Christian children, you know, in Nashville, Tennessee, it's going to disappear. Right. So in fact, this person might disappear. All of a sudden you'll find, oh, gee, there were the, you know, they had a small plane crash. You know, a barbell fell on their neck in a gym. You know, they were shot in the back three times by suicide. You know, what are some of the other things that have happened to people that have gotten in the way? Anyway, it says the White House referred the Post request for comment to the IRS and the Justice Department because the White House never answers anything for what they do because they're in a legal administration. So why should they, right? Well, I sort of embellished on the article here, which did not immediately respond. Representatives of Hunter Biden also did not respond. So what's your name? Jean-Pierre Rampal there at the press secretary. She has a novel tactic for press secretary. Her job is now to decide that she won't answer any questions. And it's really fascinating. So I'm not going to answer that. Well, then what the hell are you doing there? If you're not going to answer it, then go away. Get us somebody who will answer it. Okay? So if your job as press secretary is to not answer, then why have a press? Why have a press? Why even have press conferences? Why are the press even there? Why don't they just, in fact, all the conservatives and moderates should just leave because it's a total farce. And let the liberals ask liberal questions and they can just talk to each other. You know, what you really want to do is have a, you know, what Trump should do, quite honestly, is fire everybody in the White House press corps, pick a whole bunch of conservatives from Breitbart News, Zero Hedge, 100% Fed Up, American Greatness, you know, One American News, Newsmax, not Fox, and the good sources out there, you know, all the sources that I use, New York Post, and let those folks ask questions, you know, and that's the way to do it. You know, and then have them stay, see how long they stay during the next Democrat administration, which hopefully will never happen. As I post on Facebook, the greatest danger to this country is the Democrat Party. And the second greatest danger is the Republican Party. See the pattern? Back to the article. Lyle addressed his Wednesday letter to the top Republican and Democrat members on the Senate Finance and Judiciary Committees and on the House Judiciary and Ways and Means Committees, in addition to whistleblower caucus co-chair Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican, fortunately. Well, sending this kind of stuff to the Senate is they've already tossed it, so it doesn't matter. Quote is, despite serious risk of retaliation, my client is offering to provide you with information necessary to exercise your constitutional oversight function and wishes to make the disclosures in a nonpartisan manner to the leadership of the relevant committees on both sides of the political aisle. So the problem is we have two political parties rather than having a Congress. We don't have a Congress. We need a Congress of two houses, a Senate and a House of Representatives, not a Congress of two parties, Democrat and Republican. That is the biggest problem we have in Congress right now. Then he says, my client, another quote, has already made legally protected disclosures, in other words, he's already under whistleblower protection, or she, already made legally protected disclosures internally at the IRS through counsel to the U.S. Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. So they're already under the protection of the Inspector General, but if the Inspector General is a total Marxist, you know, suck up to the deep state, then that's not much protection at all. Given the idiocracy of the people that are in the Brandon, you know, regime, the illegal government, I want to see who this person is and see if they're actually able to offer any protection. Anyway, says Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration and to the Department of Justice. If any department was misnamed, that's the one. And this Office of Inspector General, the protected disclosures, one, contradict sworn testimony to Congress by a senior political appointee, that's Merrick Garland, which we found out later in the next article, which I'll get to. Two, involve failure to mitigate clear conflicts of interest in the ultimate disposition of the case. And three, detail examples of preferential treatment and politics improperly infecting decisions and protocols that would normally be followed by career law enforcement professionals in similar circumstances if the subject were not politically connected. In other words, Hunter Biden can do no wrong. Nobody's going to investigate him because he's the president. Excuse me. He's Biden's son, so he gets protected, whereas anybody else would be immediately thrown in jail and you know, put on suicide watch, and who knows how long they'd live. That would be Epstein, if we can use that as a verb and a metaphor. So the article says the bombshell allegations have yet to be fleshed out by congressional investigators, but come as Republicans probe Republicans probe insurrectionist Brandon's role in Hunter and first brother James Biden's foreign business dealings dating to their powerful relative's vice presidency. That would be Joseph R. Little, or Lytle, who previously represented ex-Twitter employee Yoel Roth, I'm not sure who that is, during the House Oversight Committee's probe of government pressure on social media companies to censor content, wrote that tax record privacy laws add a layer of complexity that will require guidance from Congress. And I got the last little quote here, and then I'll got another article here. It says, my client would like to share the same legally protected disclosures with Congress pursuant to 26 U.S.C. Section 610-6103F5 and the protections afforded by blah, 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 that he has already shared with other oversight authorities. So we'll see what happens. So anyway, that's that article. Let's get to the next one. Actually, I got to check my phone. It beeped during the course of this. So I need to know. Okay, looks good. All is well. Message is fine. Continuing on with the second article. I'm trying to get this in before Derek joins me in 10 minutes. New York Post, April 21st. Today, Attorney Merrick Garland, Attorney General Merrick Garland, is senior Biden official in Hunter Biden's IRS claim. See, I read this one first. Stephen Nelson, same dude, well, Washington. Attorney General Merrick Garland is the unnamed official whose sworn testimony before Congress is being challenged in a bombshell letter from an IRS whistleblower's attorney that also alleges a cover-up in the Hunter Biden criminal investigation, the Post has learned. In other words, Attorney General Merrick Garland is a liar. And he lied before Congress, which is a felony. So he should be arrested already. I mean, why hasn't he been arrested? Why hasn't Congress, filed charges to have him arrested? Good question. Attorney Mark Lytle wrote Wednesday that the longtime IRS employee wants to provide information to congressional leaders to contradict sworn testimony to Congress by a senior political appointee, Garland, and also to detail preferential treatment in the criminal probe of the first son. In other words, why he hasn't been investigated like everybody else would have been. Article says the whistleblower already made disclosures to the inspectors general of the Treasury and Justice Departments. Well, I got more faith in Treasury. Not much, but some. I don't have any faith in the Justice Department because the Justice Department is run by Merrick Garland, the person who's accused of lying to Congress by the whistleblower. So do you think if you accuse the Attorney General of lying before Congress, you're going to get great treatment from the Inspector General of the Attorney General's office? I don't think so. Now, they're supposed to be separate, supposed to be, but how much? I don't know. I mean, did they go to lunch together? Does Merrick Garland and the Attorney and the Inspector General of the Justice Department go to lunch? Are they buds? Were they both at Waco? I don't know. I'm just asking the questions. Article says the whistleblower already made disclosures to the inspector. All right, I read that. However, due to a quirk of federal law, oh, here we go, he needs congressional approval to more fully describe his allegations to his own lawyers, which he wants to do before testifying to lawmakers. Yeah, exactly. You want the story on the record before they kill you. I mean, I'm being blunt in this, but I'm serious. What do you think is going to happen? You accuse the Attorney General of lying before Congress of committing a felony? You accuse the president's son, things we all know he's done, tax evasion, scandalous deals, plus everything else he's done that's illegal. There are consequences to doing stuff like that. Anyway, article says Garland has repeatedly claimed under oath that Delaware U.S. Attorney General, U.S. Attorney David Weiss, a Trump administration holdover, gee, I'm surprised he's still there. Good for him. Go for it, David. Recommended in a 2017, that's what, 5 years ago? 6 years ago. Recommended in 2017 by the state's Democratic senators, is able to criminally charge Hunter Biden without the permission of other Justice Department leaders, despite Republicans challenging the factual accuracy of that claim. So this is interesting. Let me read that again. Garland has repeatedly claimed under oath that Delaware U.S. Attorney David Weiss, a Trump administration holdover, recommended in 2017 by the state's Democratic senators, this is where it's interesting, right, is able to criminally charge Hunter Biden without the permission of other Justice Department leaders. So that's where it gets interesting. I'm surprised that Garland has repeated that, claimed an oath. Anyway, it's just interesting. Despite Republicans challenging the factual accuracy of that claim. See, I don't get it. I don't get it. You know, it says that Delaware Attorney General David Weiss is able to criminally charge Hunter Biden without the permission of other Justice Department leaders. I'm not sure why something that doesn't make sense with that. I'll have to puzzle that out. Anyway, Garland, April 2022, last year, told the Senate Republican of Tennessee that there will not be interference of any political or improper kind in the investigation of Hunter Biden. Well, other than the fact that they're clearly covering up everything he did. Then it says he is the supervisor of this investigation, Garland said of Weiss, adding, we put the investigation in the hands of a Trump appointee from the previous administration who was the U.S. attorney for the District of Delaware. And you have me as the attorney general who is committed to the independence of the Justice Department from any influence from the White House in criminal matters. Oh, yeah, right. they appointed, they can fire him. What do you mean not have influence? Right? It says in March, Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, pressed Garland over whether Weiss was truly able to bring charges without the approval of other Justice Department officials. Okay, now it makes sense. Specifically, if the alleged crime occurred outside Delaware. So, quote is, in April 2022, here we go. This is Grassley talking. You testified to Senator Hagerty that the Hunter Biden investigation was insulated from political interference because it was assigned, as you just now told me, to the Delaware U.S. Attorney's Office, Grassley said at the time. However, that could be misleading. Quote, without special counsel authority, he could need permission of another U.S. attorney in certain circumstances to bring charges outside the District of Delaware. So in other words, the whistleblower, I guess, can't come forward to one U.S. attorney unless other U.S. attorneys or higher-ups say it's okay. That's a concern because that's how they can block it. Then it says, I would like clarification from you with respect to these concerns. The 70-year-old Garland, that's only 7 years older than me, but he looks a lot older. Let's hope for me yet. The 70-year-old Garland, a former federal judge, and they also left out the part about being assistant deputy attorney general, you know, during the Waco massacre. New York Post, you forgot that little tidbit, so I'll put it in here. 70-year-old Garland replied that Weiss is able to charge Hunter Biden even for crimes that occurred outside Delaware. Well, that's interesting. So I guess that's how any attorney, U.S. attorney, can charge anybody anywhere in the United States. I don't know if that's a good standard. I don't think so. Anyway, it says the U.S. attorney in Delaware has been advised that he has full authority to make those kinds of referrals that you're talking about or to bring cases in other jurisdictions if he feels it's necessary. And I will assure that if he does, he will be able to do that. Really? Grassley pressed, does the Delaware U.S. attorney lack independent charging authority over certain criminal allegations against the president's son outside of the District of Delaware? Response. If it's in another district, he would have to bring the case in another district. But as I said, I promised to ensure he's able to carry out his investigation and that he be able to run it. And if he needs to bring it in another jurisdiction, he will have the full authority to do that. I think Garland's lying. I think he's lying. I don't think he has any intentions of letting any charges come to Biden, because his boss, Joe, wouldn't like it and would probably fire him. You know, I mean, so I think Garland's lying through his teeth. Anyway, so during the back and forth in Iowa, the Iowa senator said, if Weiss must seek permission from a President Biden appointed U.S. attorney to bring charges, then the Hunter Biden criminal investigation isn't insulated from political interference, as you publicly proclaimed. Yeah, so there, Garland. Giving false testimony to Congress can be a crime punishable by up to 5 years in prison if it's proven that the error was intentional. So that's the hard part, is proving it's intentional. Well, I didn't know. I'm sorry. I didn't know. Of course you knew. But let me just say that again. If Weiss must seek permission from a Biden-appointed U.S. attorney to bring charges. So in other words, Weiss is Trump-appointed. So now it's starting to make sense, right? After I read these over and kind of think about them for a bit. So Weiss is Trump-appointed. They don't want a Trump-appointed U.S. attorney bringing charges against Joe Biden's son, you know, Democrat Joe Biden's son, Hunter. So they say that they need to have a Biden-appointed U.S. attorney to concur. Is that somehow bipartisan or something? I don't get it. You know, either a U.S. attorney can bring charges outside of their state or they can't. There's no in between here. It's got nothing to do with who is and what parties are involved. But that's what they're really saying. So what Garland is saying, yes, of course, Weiss can bring charges outside of Delaware, you know, to accuse Hunter Biden of tax evasion in California or wherever else he calls his Virginia, South Carolina, whatever he calls his residence. Of course he can, knowing full well that Garland is not going to let him do it. Well, that's lying to Congress. If you say, of course they can, I'll back them up fully. And then behind the scenes, he says, no, forget it. We're not going to let any charges go forward. That's lying to Congress, and that's punishable by 5 years in prison. Be nice to see him in there. Be the best place for him. Have him meet the families of the relatives who were killed at Waco. That'd be a good start, too. Anyway, so this is the Justice Department declined to comment. Well, Merrick Garland is the Justice Department right now. Anyway, says the anonymous whistleblower has since early 2020 supervised the IRS's investigation of Hunter Biden since 2020. This is 3 years. How long is it going to take, right? Hunter Biden for alleged tax evasion and related crimes linked to the 53-year-old's foreign income from countries including China and Ukraine. Well, that'd be interesting enough just to see what he's got from all these places. How come they don't, you know, how come no one calls to publish his tax records? That would be interesting. Well, maybe because he's under an ongoing investigation, he's insulated. So Weiss's office reportedly is considering related charges against the first son involving money laundering and unregistered foreign lobbying, plus lying about drug use on a gun purchase form. Yeah, he's got a bunch of felonies lined up there. There's more to the article, but I'll let you read it. You know, it's on there's a lot more to the article. I'll probably have this for Monday. Our special investigations page has all kinds of stuff on this. There's things everywhere. Special investigations, economics, our legal page. This story's big. So watch for the hearings. And when the hearings come up, I will definitely let you know, and I'll be watching it myself. All right, Derek's going to be here in a minute, so let me just play this.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio?
It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
All right, so I'm just waiting for Derek to pop up on the screen here. And as soon as he does, I'll go right to him because I want to talk money. And so Derek Park is our financial reporter here at Action Radio, located in Pace, Florida. He'll give you his phone number so you can talk to him directly off the air about your own situation. We don't give financial advice. We don't do stuff like that. He does, but not here. Here we just talk about issues and things. So let me see if I can get this. Peter Navarro has a Substack, and he's got an article here, How Rupert Murdoch and Fox News Blew the Voting Machine Lawsuit. So let me scroll down until I get to the good part here and see if I'll how much of this I can get in before Derek gets here. So it says in the current, I suppose I'll start at the beginning, otherwise it won't make sense. He says, I'm Peter Navarro, and in this edition of the Taking Back Trump's America podcast, the podcast and Substack, I'm going to slap you a little bit. Oh, there's Derek. Okay, now I don't have to read the Rupert Murdoch basically, called Fox News a bunch of cowards, which is what we've been doing, the whole week too, and saying that my contention is Fox News, rather than use the truth that the election was stolen, in their defense against this ridiculous lawsuit by Dominion voting machines, whose machines stole the election, they would rather pay blackmail money to maintain the lie that the election wasn't stolen and keep their good graces with the deep state. So they've surrendered to the deep state. They've surrendered to Dominion. They've certainly surrendered the truth. They've surrendered the First Amendment. They've surrendered everything, really. And they're paying, for the reason that now they don't have to tell the truth, where the truth would have set them free. It's always the same case. The truth will set you free, and the truth would have set Fox News free of $787 million of bribe money so that Dominion won't say nasty things about them. All right, let's get to Derek Park. Let's talk about money and finance. Maybe even talk about that. That might be a good thing to do. Derek, good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm on a roll. In fact, I'm really glad that you're here and that Rebecca's here in the next hour and Candace is here in the hour after that. I've just done 2 days of 3-hour marathons where all my reporters are out doing stuff. So I'm sick of talking. I really am. But let's get to this lawsuit. I don't know if it's affected the market at all or whether they're just laughing at it, but is there any economic consequence or fallout of Fox News paying almost $1 billion to Dominion voting machines? I don't have to get into politics with you, but what do you think?
I haven't seen anything like that, and I would say right now, I don't see any impact. It seems like everybody focused on earnings. You've had like a Tesla had a miss. There was a bunch of others that, and I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay, let me. Can I ask you to call right back here? Your line's breaking up and getting a little crackly.
Is that better? Is that where I'm at now?
It's still popping a little bit. There's how do I sound to you? Do I sound pretty clear?
You sound clear. Yeah. Do you want me to call back in?
Yeah, just call right back in. Just hang up and call right back. Let's try that.
Yep.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. There we go. Okay, so he'll there we go. So let's get him right back. But then we'll get into the financial report. Yeah, I was wondering if there'd be any fallout from that. The political fallout is massive. The fact that they've surrendered the First Amendment, that they've paid off the people that stole the election so they won't have to tell the truth about the election. So it's a fascinating – I've never seen anything like this where there's a payoff of an organization so they won't have to tell the truth. Whereas if they told the truth, they didn't have to pay anything. There we go. He's back now. Okay. So, so that's the political fallout and the First Amendment fallout from the Fox side is massive. But I'm guessing just because there's not an economic fallout on the markets. In other words, did Fox lose massive financial support backing or share price or anything like that? Was there any consequence to them?
No. I haven't seen anything yet.
Huh. Okay.
I mean, that's not to say that anything won't be there, but for the most part, I mean, I haven't seen any impacts that would shake the markets just yet.
Okay. How about Dominion voting machines? Are they publicly traded? Do they have their own stock thing on the market?
I don't believe so.
Huh. Yeah. See, I think they're based in Denver, so I think they're a domestic company. But we've also heard they've got operations in Venezuela, Canada. They might have started somewhere else. I'm just curious. Is that possible to look up real quick? See if they have.
Yeah, I'm looking it up.
If they're traded. Yeah. Okay.
I'm looking. I'm looking on my work system to see if there is any there.
I guess it'd be on Dominion Voting Machine Systems or something like that. I mean, since they're going to get almost $1 billion and stealing the election, which guarantees all the government contracts for those that want to steal the election. That's me talking, folks, not Derek. I just want to let you know there. Yeah,
it doesn't look like they're publicly traded.
So now, for a company that big, now we're just speaking in general terms here, for a company that big that makes voting machines that are used in elections all across the world, actually, how can they not be publicly traded? Are they privately held? I'm going to have to look them up myself.
787 million settlement with the, so I'm looking at this. Legal Observer said the agreement was the largest. Wants me to buy this article and microcharges, like are freaking taking control of the system now.
What's happened now?
Nothing. It's just like if you go into the news and you're not a subscriber, they won't let you read.
Oh, I had that. That happens to me all the time. I'll tell you, here's the secret. What you do is you copy the headline of the article that they won't let you read, and you put that into a search. And most of these articles are reprinted on sites that don't have you subscribe to read the article. And they'll say reprint from. That's how I read my Wall Street Journal and New York Times. I can't afford to subscribe to 50 publications of all the things that I research for this show. No way. So I do. Yeah. So I'll find a headline. I'll search a headline. I'll copy the headline, put it in, and there's a free source. There's somebody else. There's usually 4 to 5 that have reprinted the good articles that I want anyway, and I just use those sources. I quote the source on the show, New York Times through XYZ website, so there's no copyright infringement. There's no problem. With citing folks, but that's how you do it. That's how you get around subscriptions.
Right. I'm pretty sure Fox will appeal that,
You think?
no question.
Okay, so on what basis would they appeal? Because they never had to, they wimped out. They could have used the truth. They could have said, we reported that Dominion, could have stolen the election with voting machines that have internet capability and everything else, as reported by all the Democrats back in 2016. I mean, there's plenty of recordings of Hillary and Bernie Sanders. All these folks talked about, they stole the election for Trump. So it's well known. Right. It's in the public. It's a reasonable thing to say from the Democrats. It's a reasonable thing to say from Trump. So why is that not a defense that Fox was reporting what a lot of other people were saying?
Yeah, I'm not sure, specifically what they're going to appeal, but how often do you see people that have a lawsuit that don't appeal?
That's true. It makes sense. But they never had to pay it in the first place. They never even put on a defense. I mean, they'd already picked their jury. They're ready to go to opening statements. And then they settled. This is a January 6th moment. This is don't watch the people, wandering around upstairs, dressed in Viking outfits. Look what's going on under the Capitol, where the arms are being twisted to vote for Brandon and to totally dismiss the Trump electors. It's that kind of thing. It's like, what's really going on? Who got to who? Who got to Fox and said, you better not bring this lawsuit forward. You better settle this right now. That's my suspicion.
Right.
You know, this is my conspiracy tinfoil hat moment for this morning. Something happened. Somebody got to Fox. I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk economics. Let's get to the report and tell me what you think of what's going on.
Okay. Hold on just a second. I was somewhere else on my...
Aren't we all? Yeah. We're always somewhere else here.
Well, I was a couple minutes late this morning.
Oh, no problem. Do you want to get to it a bit later? Or have you got it? Take a second to pull it up. Okay.
Just takes me a minute to get to it, you know, when our system is cooperating.
Okay.
So it's a Monday for my system, I guess.
That's funny. Anyway, I'm going to go take a run to Matt Gaetz's office sometime this afternoon or this morning, well, or late this morning. I haven't decided which, but I want to go there and present, you know, because they haven't talked to me for a while. I've called them, I've emailed, I've tried to get an appointment, but I'm going to present our vaccine liability, end of big tech censorship and constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money and say, hey, you guys want to support these? I'm going to be there in person, so I'll let you know what happens. I'll let you know what happens after that. I'll post that on Facebook. So that's my goal for today. So all you folks who haven't sent in your vaccine product liability from the stadium last Friday, last Friday night? Did you hear about this? You may not have.
You had told me about it.
Okay, so I got the whole stadium to go to my website, copy the link to our vaccine bill, get Matt Gaetz, email thing, contact Matt Gaetz's website and send it in. I don't know how many people did. No one's told me, so we'll find out. Anyway, so I'm going to go talk to him in person and say, hey, let's see what happens. So what you got now? What's happening economically?
All right, here's the report. Good morning, everybody. This is Derek Park with the Action Radio Financial Report. The market fell on mixed earnings results and contradictory economic data. Equity markets fell today as the earnings season fails to shore up investor sentiment, and the April Philly Fed Manufacturing Index contracted more than expected. Tesla led the technology-heavy NASDAQ lower as results of contracting margins and falling probability after a recent round of price cuts for its vehicles. Everywhere in the economy, continuing an initial jobs report came in higher than expected, and taken with the Philly Fed Manufacturing Index slowdown are causing concern among investors that the economy could be slowing and heading towards a recession. As a result, Treasury yields fell more than pronounced in the short end of the curve when the two-year Treasury yield was down, driving some of the bull steepening on the curve. On the international front, European equity markets were lower and Asian shares were mixed. The price of oil is trading at about $77 a barrel as forward demand forecasts drop and the dollar strengthens. U.S. equities closed down today. The Dow closed down 109 points or 0.32% to 33,788. And the NASDAQ closed down 98 points or 0.8% to 12,060. And the S&P 500 closed down 25 points or 0.59 to 4130. Again, the 10-year Treasury yields are trading at 3.54%, lower by 0.06%. In the commodity markets, the price of oil was down $2.09 or 2.64% to $77.15. And the spot price of gold was up $7.30 for 0.36 to $2,014.60. This is Terry Park of the Action Radio Financial Report. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
You have to memorize that so I can give it more often. But anybody who wants to get his phone number, then just go to the podcast. You should be able to get it from there. This is interesting. Now, the price of gas around here has dropped a little bit. It was $3.45, I think, last week. Now it's down to about $3.38, $3.37, depending on where you go. I'm kind of an Exxon fan because of the Tecraline to keep my slightly older car, you know, cleaner, which seems to work out pretty well. A little plug for Exxon. So you can support Action Radio by contacting me directly. I will tell you how, Exxon. Thank you very much. But the price of oil, $77. In this environment, the Saudis have cut production. how is this possible? There's lower supply. We don't have our strategic petroleum reserve. That was given away to keep the price down and to China. The Saudis and the Russians have cut back 500,000 barrels, what, a day or a week or whatever it is, or a month. I'm not sure, but they've cut back. How is it that oil is only $77 a barrel?
I'd have to dig into it. I mean, I'm not really sure. I know the Saudis and OPEC cut production, which should spike. We're going into the summer season, which should spike, but oil tends to not do well when there's recession in the cards, because people bottle up and drive them.
Go ahead.
With recession on the move or possibly still in the cards, I personally still believe that we might see what they call a rolling recession or one that we kind of move right through. It doesn't seem, with jobs kind of being resilient and banks being resilient, it doesn't seem like it's going to be this big hurricane that a lot of people are thinking is going to happen.
Well, considering, as far as I'm concerned, we've been in a recession since pretty much Brandon took office, because everything he did set the stage for one. They borrowed trillions of dollars. They cut our energy supply. They ruined the supply lines. They did everything that they could. They've raised taxes. They've raised regulations. They've pushed us into electric cars with subsidies, pushed electricity for a grid that can't handle it. And so they've done everything possible to ruin the economy. Why wouldn't we have a recession? but how many weeks do you think they've said heading towards recession? I'll bet you it's a year and a half to 2 years, probably a year and a half, that those three words, heading towards recession, have been in the report. When you and I, at least I know, that we're in one. I mean, because I know economic activity is being restricted. There's fewer cars on the road. In fact, the oil price proves that there's a recession. And just anecdotal evidence, there are fewer cars on the road. It's easier to get around. People aren't driving as much. Yeah. So how can they say that, how can they say that we're heading towards it unless they're just afraid of that word, And if you say that we're in a recession, does the economy all of a sudden change? Oh, my God, we're in a recession. Or are people reacting to the 20 to 30% rise in food prices and everything else? So you can say inflation 6-7%, but you look at what the cost of goods is around here. I've watched, my favorite Tropicana orange juice, for example, is up at least 25-35% in the last year.
Oh yeah.
And that's just one.
For sure.
So it's great for my weight loss. I can't afford that. So let's, we'll skip on that. We'll get the smaller quantity this week. Drink more water. But in terms of the economy, so to say that we're not in a recession is stupid, I think.
Yeah, I believe that we have been in a recession. I would say that there is some mitigating criteria that would kind of, make it worse, i.e. the unemployment. That normally does spike when you're in a recession. Doesn't necessarily have to spike hard, mm-hmm. what I mean, but it does. And we needed to move at least another 0.5% before we could say that, this is I guess, officially a recession.
It's interesting with unemployment. You got to throw in the COVID factor. And so I had Ed Dowd on the show, and he was fascinating, and I've watched him on other specials. But we have a weird situation now where there's a ridiculous amount of people who are disabled, who are out of work. So unemployment is measured. The measurement that you get, the U6 or whatever it is a survey of people that are looking for work. Well, if you're disabled, you're not looking for work. So if you're disabling literally millions of people with the COVID jab, again, this is my opinion on this, you're going to have a lower unemployment rate simply because even though there's jobs out there, people aren't looking for work. And if you're not looking for work, you're not counted as unemployed. So the real thing to look at is the worker participation rate. That's the indicator. So how many people are of working age and how many are working compared to 3 years ago? Is that possible to look up, or should we do that another week?
I'd have to do some digging. I would say, let's do that another time. It's not that I don't want to. It's just like I'd spend time sitting here looking for data.
Yeah, I don't want you to do that. I'd rather talk to you. It's more fun to chat. We can always do it another week. So let me put on for next week. Oh, you're off next week.
Yes.
So let's put on for the following week, which is May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Hey, buenos dias, Cinco de Mayo. This would be fun. Mm-hmm. So that'd be kind of fun. So maybe we should do a Cinco de Mayo show and talk about how another holiday that Americans celebrate that Mexico doesn't, because Mexican Independence Day is like September 16th. Something like that. So let's go, Derek. And it's going to write down here, worker participation. I'll look it up myself, of course, because I'm curious. But would that be, let's just put it this way, would that be a better measure rather than the unemployment rate at this particular point?
I mean, I think it might give you more thorough data.
Okay. All right, anyway, so I'm just making a little note to myself here. All right, so yeah, that's what I figured. Okay, well, let's talk about a couple other things. Well, first of all, anything on your mind that you want to talk about? I should probably ask you this more often, but
I don't have anything specific. No, when you get into other topics, you know, I mean, I typically will say things that I feel a little bit more strongly about.
Okay. How about the IRS whistleblower, the whole case of the protection in government or the IRS in general, tax collections, things like that. Has that shown up? Are people writing about – New York Post has got this covered. But it turns out, as I've always believed, that Merrick Garland's a liar. He's a felon for lying to Congress. They're covering up for Hunter Biden. There's a lot more there. But the IRS in general, are they reaching – you know, is anybody worried that the government's not going to collect enough money? Or things that the IRS are not—they're treating people unfairly. Are people being persecuted, prosecuted, investigated because they're conservative, and let off because they're liberal? Is there any kind of talk like that?
There's no—I'm sure there's articles already. You know what I mean? But there's nothing that there's nothing that's affecting the markets per se right now.
Okay. There's a gas shortage in South Florida I was hearing about. Is that because of the weather or is there some supply problem? Do you know anything about that?
I don't actually. I haven't seen anything. And I mean, I perused the news articles pretty thorough.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's new. This is all brand new stuff. And the thing I just heard this morning, cause I get One American News right before I go on the air. So the 6 to 7 hour I'll pick up, you know, a bunch of stories. Hyundai and Kia. I've heard about this before. The cars are easy to steal. I've heard the news reporter, One American News reporter on that social media, you can actually go on social media and find out how to steal them. And they're facing a big recall. So what's going on? What's going on in Auto World?
I know that some of their cars are easier to steal. Yes. I haven't seen it affect their stock price or anything yet.
Hmm. How do recalls affect, company stock, because it seems to me it should actually increase it because they're fixing a problem, but other people might see it as an expense, so it might lower their stock. What happens with recalls?
It depends on how bad the recall is and what the recall does. You know, I mean, if you take, you know, what was going on with Ford with those Firestone tires, for example, you know, where the tires were popping and vehicles were flipping. That because people were dying, that was like that turned into a monster problem for Ford. Then they had, the Takata airbags in GMs and Hondas and, in Toyotas, it got the whole industry. That was bad because airbags were just popping and breaking people's arms and, breaking people's noses. And,
well, initially they killed babies because they were, I don't mean to get too graphic this morning, but they were decapitating kids. That's why they moved kids to the back seat. The airbags were coming out so ferociously that they had to put, that's why they put kids in the back seat, folks, because the airbags were killing them. And yet, rather than fix the airbags or get rid of the airbags or make them optional, they kept the airbags and insist everybody put the kids in the back seat, and now they're being left there because people who don't normally take their kids, you know, with them are going to work and leaving the kids in the parking lot and they're dying. So there's all these unintended consequences that people don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to rather than fix the problem with the airbags, you know. But anyway, so I was just curious, huh?
Yeah.
I don't remember Firestone. I don't remember the tires. I remember Toyota had a problem with accelerators that would just accelerate. And cars were crashing because people didn't know how to stop their cars.
Yeah.
And of course, my first response is, you know, don't you get trained in neutral? You put your car in neutral. The engine can rev as fast as it wants. You're not going anywhere. Or if you have a stick shift, you know about gearing down? Hello. How about the parking brake as well as the regular brakes? Do people know how, this is just between you and me question. Do people know how to drive anymore? are they taught anything about vehicles at all?
Yeah, no. I mean, not really, I would say. I mean, yeah, you know, my first vehicle that I learned how to drive was a stick shift.
Mm-hmm. What was it? Do you remember? I bet you do.
Who was what?
What was it? What did you learn it? I'm just curious.
Where or what?
What? What kind of car?
Ford Ranger.
That was a stick shift? Well, that's interesting. I had a VW Bug.
Well, I mean,
1960, you know,
yeah.
I had a 64
I had,
Bug.
What was it? It was a 90. God, it was like a 92 or 93 Ford Ranger in 1994.
Gears.
And then, I had another one when I was in college. I was in college in, you know, from, you know, well, it was my senior college days, but from 2000 to 2003, I had a, or 2002, really, it was a 97 Ford Ranger, and it was a stick shift, single cab.
Interesting. So did you serve before college or after college? I think you must have been before.
During and after. I mean, college I was in a program that's like the National Guard, but basically it is the National Guard. And then, you know, I mean, that's how I had to do my scholarship because I was already had an associate's degree and I was 2 years ahead of the ROTC program. So my option was go in the Guard, and then, you know, finish out career if I wanted to commission as an officer. That was the only way that was available.
Hmm. What rank did you finish up with, if you don't mind me asking? I'm just curious.
04, major.
Which one?
04.
What's that?
04, major.
Major, cool. Okay. So for all those that are complaining about college and student loans and things like that, how viable is this? Can most people get the college paid for by going through the military, or is it much more selective now, especially with the obesity problem?
I would say, actually, I would argue because of recruiting concerns, that it's probably more open. You know, so I got, you know, I went up to the ROTC department in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was trying to go to college and, you know, senior college was more expensive. You know, so, you know, I went and kind of sold my soul to the Army, but I went up there cause my dad knew that they had something called hip pocket scholarships. I don't know if they're called that anymore. And what the Army does is say, okay, we've got an ROTC department. They go to the what's called the PMS, the professor of military science there. That's an active duty lieutenant colonel position. And they say, okay, you've got, 20 scholarships per year that you can, I don't know how many, I'm just making up a number, right? That you can just assign to people that you deem worthy, right? You know, and normally that's, I'll call it the good old boy program, people that alumni that have been there, they know they can call up there and say, you know, hey, I vouch for this person, you know, put them into the assessment process. You know, and they do an assessment. They do a physical fitness test. They ask you a bunch of questions. You have to fill out a questionnaire, you know, and they see if you're really worthy for it. You know, the fact that my father retired out of there, that's good news.
Right.
You know, so,
okay.
You know, my father had lineage there, but yeah, all of them do that. You know, I almost got my niece in at one point in time, but she decided to go a different route. You know, so yeah, it's a viable option. If they don't have any available, typically the way the option works is, you go up there, you apply, if you're accepted and you don't complete the program, you owe the military an 8-year enlistment.
Oh, wow.
You know, or 4 years active duty, 4 years inactive reserve, right? So you owe them.
Right.
You owe them. Typically, it's a year per year they pay, or 2 years per year they pay for school, right? Is how
which
it goes.
Makes sense.
But the minimum is a 4-year enlistment. You know, so you know, when you sign that contract, because they pay you while you go to school. You know, back when I did it, it was I was paid by the ROTC program, not the National Guard. So, but because I was in the Guard or what was called an S&P program, you know, I got like a little bit of an extra stipend, which most people in ROTC got $300 a month. I got, $450, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
So $450 a month to go to school. That's not bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Know.
Yeah. And they pay for school too. So yeah, that's, well, this is what I'm thinking.
That's it.
Because
yeah.
With the cost of student loans these days, that's something that, you know, people should look more into. And I think had I not been, in New England, you know, in a liberal town in Lexington, Massachusetts, where I went to high school, and the University of Massachusetts out in Amherst, you know, both very liberal places in liberal New England where the military is not, you know, particularly well thought of. We didn't have any recruiting offices in our town. I think the nearest one was like two or three towns away. You know, they just didn't because, you know, they certainly didn't. You know, the only people that came to our school was, I think the Navy band, their jazz band came there. But the recruiters never came. They never talked to us, you know. And my band director was the radio operator in World War II. You know, so I went to high school in the 70s. And so for him, you know, he was in his, I guess, 60s. He was getting ready to retire in a few years, maybe 50s. But whatever it was, you know, I was with the World War II generation. I was with the greatest generation. They were, you know, getting near retirement age. And so those are the folks that I was exposed to, some of them. But even so, the general attitude was, you know, whatever you do, don't join the military. It was quite fascinating. But I think, you know, under different circumstances, and if I'd actually been born in this country, I think there's a good chance I would have done it. I wanted to be a fighter pilot, but again, the eyesight kind of took that out. And said, and if I can't be a fighter pilot, you know, what else you got? I even talked to the recruiters. What else you got? Go ahead, make me a deal. Come on, what do you got? You gotta give me something. Okay, fine. You know, anyway, and they didn't. So, fine. So that's what happened there. Anyway, I got my other guest for the next hour. Any advice for the economy for this week or things to look for or, you know, I mean, recession isn't the worst thing in the world. it's just an economic problem, but there are ways out of it. But that's my advice on that. But
the only advice I give is all recessions haven't been bad. You know, if we are in a recession here, or we're going to call it a recession, there's been 14 since Great Depression. Out of the 14 since the Great Depression, 7 of those were end of the year positive. You know, so you know, basically half of them have been bad, right? Is kind of a way to look at it. And out of the half that have been bad, only really 3 have been, you know, catastrophes. So don't worry about recession. You know what I mean? With the guy that ran the most successful mutual fund, Peter something or other, basically
he's that
said,
famous, huh?
I can't remember his last name. It was the Magellan Fund at Fidelity, is what it was. It was the most successful by time, but it ended up falling apart after he left. He basically said most people lose more money preparing for recessions than the actual recession causes. You know, so yeah, it's people hear the word, and especially because of 08-09, they panic. I would say don't panic, stay calm, you know, take advice from your advisor and you'll get through it.
Makes sense to me. And we can reach you how?
At 850-995-0082.
There we go. Don't be afraid to always give yourself a shameless plug. All right, sir. Let's do it in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Have a good time next week.
All right. We'll see you. Yes, sir.
There
Bye-bye.
We go. There we go. Derek Park, who is our financial reporter here at Action Radio. I have both my guests on the line right now, but I figured I'd give them the proper introduction. I think Rebecca's already heard this, but just in case, let's get our two guests of the day. Rebecca Charles and Marie Clark. So this is, I was talking to Rebecca recently, and we're going to make a regular report. Although I want to celebrate both of them being on the show, this is not, you know, what I would call a happy hour. This is not it's an inspiring hour. It's a situation where we take tragedies and we turn them into positive action. And so that's what I want to do. Rebecca Charles has a website, Death by Hospital Protocol. And so I congratulate for her work, but I'm sorry that because of what happened to her daughter, she's doing this work. And so, Rebecca, I'm going to put you up first, and I'm going to get Marie next. So, Rebecca, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, but it's also necessary. And so, you know, how can I put this exactly, but we want to be inspiring. And even though we have a tragedy that we have to deal with. And in fact, I was talking off the air that COVID and the hospital protocols have affected me personally too. Our webmaster, Eric Cawley, the creator of writeyourlaws.com, was killed by his hospital a year ago, February. My very good friend, Dr. Peter Pry, I can't prove it, but I absolutely believe he was killed by the COVID jab. His cancer came back, you know, raging about 6 months after he got the shots, which he needed for travel and, you know, outside the United States. And so this affects me personally. Plus the fact that I've been involved in this, you know, for 3 years where we basically solved all the problems with COVID for the government, for the media, for everybody in about 2 weeks, you know. So from the time I had COVID initially in January, the beginning of January, before anybody knew what it was, And so I had this weird cough that wouldn't go away. I had all the symptoms that I found out later. It's like, oh, I had COVID. Okay, well, now I'm immune because I had COVID, so I don't have to worry about it, right? But I coughed. I've got the shows to sound terrible. I mean, I really do. I was asking for guest hosts and everything. It was pretty wild. And we all had this bug that was going around, and nobody knew what it was, right? We found out later, mm-hmm. Oh, that was COVID, you know? And so it was strange. I had to sleep sitting up and all these other things that happened. But 2 days of rest, and I was fine. And I was 60 at the time, so I was no spring chicken, you know. And so but being naturally healthy and a decent immune system, you know, I got over it and just carried on. And then when all this other nonsense came out, first of all, Trump banned travel from China. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's nice. That was the end of January. Mid-February, well, actually late February, we had Bill Gertz on the show. Bill Gertz is the Washington Times national security reporter. And Dr. Peter Pry is the one that brought him on, and we heard about the Wuhan lab. So we knew about the Wuhan lab February 25th of 2020. 2 days later, February 27th, I wrote a bill for Congress. And Marie, just to let you know, we write citizen legislation here. This is what separates us from every other show on the planet. And I'll get into that in a little bit, but I want to let you guys talk first. But just to give you a quick history for Marie, too, that February 27th, I wrote a bill saying that only half of Congress's COVID money could be spent on vaccines, which I didn't believe in. Because of what happened in the 90s with anthrax, Gulf War syndrome, things like that. So I was already anti-vax before this even started. And so then I said that the other half had to be spent on early treatments because I'd already read the protocol by D.D. Relith, and I knew that chloroquine killed COVID. So we already had a treatment. Well, if you got a treatment, you don't need a vaccine because it's this stupid. So I broadcast that March 2nd of 2020, and I was promptly banned by Big Tech, and it's been oppressed ever since. And here we are. 3 years later, still trying to break through censorship for telling the truth back March 2nd. And ever since then, on pretty much every show since then. Well, with that, let me welcome Marie Clark to the show. Marie, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me, Greg.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So I'm going to kind of turn this over to Rebecca. And you guys, you know, you can tell me your story, get people caught up on what's happening, talk about your website, talk to Marie directly. And just I'm just going to kind of sit back for a bit here and listen to you guys. So, Rebecca. Let me let you tell your story again, and let's inform folks what's going on.
Yeah, well, I'll start with August 27th, 2021. I check, my daughter pulse ox. I don't want to repeat everything again, but
no, you don't have to. People can see our previous show. You can just. I'm more interested in the website, but like I say, you can introduce yourself however you want to, but don't feel you have to repeat the whole story because we do have a show on that.
No,
you've already done it, so it's okay. But to just give folks just a brief introduction.
Yeah. So my life changed in 2027, knowing that the safest place in the world turned out to be the unsafest place in the world, pretty much a kill and feel, a genocide, and it took my daughter's life 40 days afterwards. So coming out of all of this and confusion and realizing that this was premeditated murder, I decided to fight for justice because no one is allowing reviews on the hospital website. They took down our review of the hospital, what they did.
Oh,
and
really?
People... Yeah.
Wait a minute. You can do Yelp reviews of everything, but there's no reviews of hospitals anymore?
Well, when you write it on the hospital review website, they take it
uh-huh.
down.
Well, isn't that special?
I decided. Mm-hmm. And this is a story from many people who lost their loved ones in the hospital to the hospital protocol that mm-hmm. you cannot write your reviews there. So I decided to have a safe place and take action, which is what I'm doing, and build a mm-hmm. website. For all Americans, and this is for all Americans to go to, it's a public service that you could check on that website, the hospital, the doctor, before you enter into a hospital or go to a doctor's office and see if he was involved in the protocol, if he murdered anyone, you know. So this is where my vision came, that people need to know the truth. People need to know a safe place to go.
So people can actually write their story on your website. They can name the doctors. They can name the nurses. They can name the hospitals. They can give all the details. Is that how it works?
Yes. Yes. And I also want the images of them. I don't want them hiding their faces behind a mask. I want the world to see who they are.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Well, we're all about exposure here and telling the truth and then using that information to write corrective legislation. I've already written the legislation 2 years ago. Vaccine product liability mm-hmm. is the biggest one. And the other one is our bill that would eliminate big tech censorship. Those two bills alone would change everything. And had they come out when I wrote them 2 years ago, we wouldn't be in this position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. What's the name of your website?
It's called deathbyhospitalprotocol.com.
Yeah. I want that out there now so people can look it up as we're talking if they want to sort of check it out. Mm-hmm. So deathbyhospitalprotocol.com. And it's on, for those that are in our Action Radio vaccine group, it's private. For the simple reason that I don't want it sabotaged like our Dr. Zelenko Action Radio Coronavirus Clearinghouse was disabled by Facebook for telling the truth on hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and everything else. So I'm here with you 100%. I know exactly, although I haven't lost directly a family member, I've lost very close friends. And I've seen what's been going on with us since the very beginning, since Dr. Fascist, as we call him, that evil, probably the most evil person in this century. He's allowed to do what he's done. Yeah, so I'm with you.
Well, we need to put an end to this, and I believe hurting them in their pockets is how we could put an end to it. Mm-hmm. If people stop going to the hospitals and people stop going to these doctor's offices who were involved, they're going to start losing money.
Yeah, it's hard to think that the worst thing you can do if you get sick is go to a hospital. I mean, that's counterintuitive.
Today people are petrified, even ones who were not involved with a loved one, you know, being, you know, killed in a hospital, people are petrified to go into a hospital today.
I had to have a, you know, your over 50 colon check, you know, and I was scared to go simply because, not because of the check, because I already had one before in my mid-50s, and I'm 63 now. I didn't want to get vaccinated. I didn't want to get a COVID shot while I was under and not able to know what happened. Mm-hmm. Now, that didn't happen, and I talked to the folks ahead of time, and they don't even have the stuff on the premises. So I felt a lot better about that. But that was my only concern. I wasn't concerned with getting the check. The concern was, am I going to get the jab and have to deal with the consequences of that and possibly face death or crippling injury? Or, you know, was it going to have to go to Dr. Judy Mikovits and start, you know, taking all her products? I should do it anyway. But what am I going to have to do for the rest of my life to make up for something that was done to me without my consent? And that's the whole basis of this. Everything that's happening to people is happening without their consent. They're doing it anyway.
Yes.
Can you explain that a bit?
Yes. Explain it. I don't know. It seems like everything is upside down in the healthcare system. A gentleman in California went in for hiccups for over 24 hours, and next thing you know, they vented him. And
what? For hiccups?
Yes, for hiccups. I believe that lawsuit, they started a case on that. Marie knows more about it. But he went in for hiccups.
I want to get to Marie, too. Yeah. So did he die in the hospital?
Yes, they vented him. They said he had COVID. Then next thing they did, they said they had to amputate his legs because he has diabetes and et cetera, et cetera. Then they said that the surgery went well, and then the next day he died. Amputated his legs, and he died. And
for the hiccups.
This is
as absurd and insane as it gets. I can cure hiccups. Mm-hmm. I used to cure hiccups with my daughter by telling her not to think of polar bears. And, of course, you think of polar bears. But what that does is that interrupts the mental it interrupts the hiccup response. All you have to do to cure hiccups is interrupt the response. So you give somebody something to think about other than hiccups, and they stop thinking of hiccups. And they, you know, like I say, if I told you, try not to think of polar bears, what are you thinking of? Polar bears, right? Well, it doesn't matter what you think of. I could do, you know, little pink butterflies. It wouldn't matter what I said as long as you just – that's all you have to do to cure hiccups. It's that simple. I know. I did it for years. So they have someone go, they probably got remdesivir. The kidneys probably failed. They probably had the lungs full of fluid. They probably put them on a ventilator. They got diabetes. I don't know how. Or they said they had diabetes, amputated their legs, and they killed them. And they made $130,000 in the process. Bonus.
Probably
right?
Much more than that. Yeah,
okay.
But Marie is an interviewer, so she has so many cases that wasn't even COVID-related that they killed.
Well, interview your guest, and let's hear from her. Or, I mean, introduce your guest. I'm sorry.
Marie Clark, she did my first interview, and that's how we got to know each other. She's a wonderful woman. She was also part of the protocol. She was also in the hospital, and she could tell you her story, but she is a survivor from this affair. Marie, you go ahead.
Wow. Welcome, Marie. Welcome back to Radio.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
It's a pleasure.
I'll introduce myself by just saying that I am a survivor of remdesivir, five doses.
Oh, no.
I was trapped in an ER for 5.5 days with a lot of neglect, you know, not even a washcloth or a bar of soap. And during that time period that I was there, I didn't know anything about remdesivir, first of all. They just told me it was a COVID cocktail. And after the first day, the nurse comes in and says to me, "Gee, you look really good." And I said, "I do?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Most people your age," he said, "usually have a face mask on, and by the third or fourth day are vented." I said, I looked at him and I thought to myself, they've got this whole thing planned. They don't even know who I am. I've been here less than 24 hours. And,
and you're already categorized by age and by life expectancy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I was in Medicare. I was on Medicare. So you know what? I was perfect. So what I did was I thought to myself, first of all, during the day, after the morning when they came in and they were done with their dosages, sometimes I got food, sometimes I didn't. I would go hours without being checked on. One day, by the fifth day, I actually I hit the bell, you know, and by then I had moved across from the nurse's station. I was in the basement ER. And I didn't know how many people were down there. I mean, they had me basically closed in, you know, blinds drawn and everything else. There were two things I could control. I could get up and walk around because they weren't around, you know, to stop me. And I could drink water. They wouldn't give me a pitcher, but I saved all these cups and I would line the cups up and I would drink, I would just make myself drink water because I knew
that
if nothing else.
Why the water?
I have no idea. Why the water? You know, I had no idea, but I had two things I could control. I could control walking, and I could control drinking water. And I have no idea why, but I just was totally...
Do you know what you sound like? You sound like a prisoner of war.
That's exactly what it was like.
Okay.
I had no contact with my family for 3 days because my phone... They didn't bother telling me that there was a guest Wi-Fi, you know. And I knew my daughter was out there advocating for me, but I just wasn't able to talk to her. And what happened was by the time I got to this fifth day and I had rung the bell because they hadn't taken the breakfast tray away, my meager little scrambled egg. And the bell was on for 4 hours and no one came. Finally, I got up, I walked to the, I thought, you know, this, I've had enough. It was five and a half, I was there for 5.5 days. I just had had enough. And I opened up the door and I looked down the hall and in both directions, there was just, the halls were dark. And I thought to myself, where is everybody? So I started to yell, anybody here? Anybody here? No answer. I thought, this is so crazy. Then I laughed to myself and I thought, well, I always wanted to do this. And my biggest, loudest voice, I yelled, help, twice. Help, help. And all of a sudden, right, literally probably 15 feet from me, this young man, male nurse, leans his head out from behind a computer screen and says, can I help you?
I looked at him.
I didn't know whether I just wanted to jump over that counter and strangle the guy, right?
Yeah, right.
And I said, don't you hear that bell? It's been ringing for 4 hours. It's got a bright light. Don't you see it?
Yeah.
You know?
And the guy response said, was?
Yeah, the response was, oh, okay, I'll turn it off. Oh, well, gee, thanks. So he turns it off, and then I realized to myself, he's not going to feed me. He's not. I had already missed.
They're
lunch.
Expecting you. To, let me be blunt here. They're expecting you to die. That whole wing is set up. It's dark. It's a death room.
Exactly.
It's a death waiting room. Okay.
They figured I was going to sit there and just die, because they figured, okay, it's a gray-haired person. You know, she's in her 70s. She's just going to sit and die. You know. Didn't expect, because they didn't know I was getting up and walking every hour. They didn't know I was sitting there constantly drinking water.
See, the
and
dehydration,
really
that's a part of it. That's the quickest
the
way to kill somebody.
The dehydration is a part of it. I didn't know that at the time.
I've heard this
all
before.
All I knew was that I had to drink water, because I've always done that. I'm totally aware that as you get older, your thirst reflex diminishes.
Really?
So I thought if there's
that's
ever
good for me
a time to,
yeah.
That's why you'll hear a lot of people, older people say, oh, I don't drink water very much. That's because as you get older, that reflex just diminishes.
But you should drink it anyway.
So you just have to, you know, be aware of it.
All right. Thank you for that.
Anyway, at I think it was about 5:45, I was sitting watching this little tiny TV, and in walks this doctor, and he steps inside the door. No mask, but he just steps inside the door. And I'd never seen the guy before, but he had on a white coat, and it had bright green letters, ICC. And I later learned it was Intensive Care Consortium. That's a whole other story.
Consortium? But, that sounds very corporate.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They're headquartered out of California, but they're only in red states, which is also very interesting.
So now you've just opened up a whole can of worms. You know, were there more deaths in conservative states than liberal states?
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's a whole other conversation for another
day. Okay, you're coming back. You'll be back on the show. I can tell right now. Go ahead.
But so this guy walks in, this doctor walks in, and he looks at me, and I said, hello. And he said, hello. He said, you don't look so good. And I'm thinking, no kidding, you know. But I was down from 6 liters of oxygen to 2, so I was improving. I knew that, you know. And he said, well, we're here to help you breathe better. I said, and how do you propose to do that? He said, we're going to put a tube down your throat. I said, no, you're not. Absolutely not. I said, you can turn right around and you can get out of this room. And I want you to know, you tell everyone else that they will not do that to me. That was it. He was so shocked. I think he expected, you know, this complete, you know, acquiescence and, you know.
Well, see, that's the problem. And Rebecca can talk about this too, that everybody goes to the doctor and they just, whatever they say, it must be right. Now, I knew, because I'm a conscious thinking person. I grew up in a very sort of like a hostile family environment. I mean, they give dysfunctional a whole new meaning, right? So I was already knowing that I had to survive on my own from a very early age, not to trust adults or anybody, even your own family. So for me to be skeptical of doctors, it just came naturally. And so I actually consented to having open heart surgery to repair a valve, which actually worked extremely well. Good surgeon, talked to him, got 4 other opinions. I actually had 5 opinions, not 2, but 5 before I did this. But the problem came 3 weeks later, and my chest was filling up with fluid. And had I been around during COVID, they would have put me on a ventilator, but they did the logical thing. They took the fluid out, and they drained over 2 days, 4.5 liters of fluid. I think this was caused by blood thinners. So then the nurse Ratchet comes back in after my lungs have reinflated, which is an incredibly painful experience, by the way. So I actually was taking the full measure of painkillers that afternoon. But afterwards they said, well, we need to put you back on blood thinners again. I said, like hell you are. Oh, no, you might get a stroke. What's a stroke from? Lack of activity. I said, you mean me, the person that was walking the day I had open heart surgery? Me, the most active person you've had on this ward forever, and I know because I've talked to the nurses. I said, you want to give me blood thinners again after having 4.5 liters of fluid pumped out of, you know, taken out of my chest, which almost killed me? I said, is this what you want to do? Well, this is what's recommended. I won't tell you what I said next, but you can imagine. Pretty much what you said.
Yeah. Pretty much what
And here I am today. Healthy, fine. I do 14-mile bike rides. I'm in the gym, you know, 2-3 times a week. So the heart surgery was a good thing. You know, I don't have myocarditis. My heart didn't swell up,
well,
and I didn't die.
And you have to, have to, as I think, you know, you have to be that advocate for yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows you better than you. I really, you know, we have so decompartmentalized medicine, just like everything else in the country. I mean, to the point where, you know, you don't look at a person as a whole anymore. You know, I'm a kid who grew up when the doctor came to my bedside. now you just have corporate entities. They've taken away the local doctor who had his, you know, shingle hanging outside the door, and now he has to be in an environment of corporate, you know, these corporate entities, and that are controlled by the hospitals. I mean, a good example, I mean, in my local hospital, I'm in central New Hampshire, and I'm right by a ski area and Gunstock Mountain. And
oh, I know where you are. I grew up in New England, in Lexington, Massachusetts. I know exactly where you are.
Oh, okay, sure.
I think I've skied Gunstock. They still have that name? Yeah. That's so politically incorrect. Of course, it's New Hampshire, not Massachusetts, so yeah.
Hey, it's Gunstock. It'll always be Gunstock.
Okay, good.
And, you know, it's owned by the citizens of the county. So they actually
Rainbow Mountain?
Took out.
Sorry, I'm deceiving you.
They actually took out the orthopedic group, the doctors. I knew something was amiss when I first heard this. They closed the maternity ward. This is in, it used to be called Lake Regions Hospital. Now
it's
called.
The hospital you went to, or are we talking about just, I just want to keep the story straight.
No, that's where I went to, yeah. It was bought out by Concord Hospital.
Okay,
and now
course.
It's Concord Hospital Laconia, yeah.
Right.
So, but when they took the orthopedic group out and they said, you can't, they actually set up their own place. And I'm thinking, how bizarre is that? One of the biggest money makers, the orthopedic center
bones?
Right behind with where you've got Gunstock Mountain right behind you.
Oh yeah, ski injuries, right? Ski injuries.
Ski
yeah.
injuries, and plus it's a year-round center now. It's not just skiing. They have zip lining. They have all kinds of activities all year round.
All of which break bones,
and
right?
They,
sorry, I'm
well,
kidding.
And this is—it just was bizarre to see that. And I, you know, you continue to see the breakdown and the difference between the corporate followers, you know, those doctors who just fall in line, and then and then those doctors who were, you know, the early treatment in terms of COVID, doctors who are not going to bend the corporate, you know, like these fellows here. It's very interesting to watch that, but I wanted to kind of move on from my story and actually talk about something you touched on, because you mentioned you've been touched with a friend who came down and succumbed, I think, to cancer. Isn't that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Kidney cancer. Yeah.
And I have one of my very dearest, closest friends had pancreatic cancer 5 years ago. She went to Dartmouth-Hitchcock, had the Whipple surgery, which is a very specialized surgery.
What's that?
It's called
Whipple. I've never heard of that.
It was named after the doctor, the surgeon who invented it.
Uh-huh.
And it's a special surgery around the pancreas. It's very complicated. It doesn't have a great survival rate, you know, but it adds life to people.
Well,
neither
does pancreatic cancer. It's one of the worst cancers to get.
Exactly. And when she went in, she had part of the pancreas removed, part of the stomach removed, her right kidney removed, part of her intestine removed. They said that, you know, her likelihood after 6 weeks in the hospital, you know, was about a 3-week survival. So she went home to die. And guess what? She didn't. Not only didn't, but 2 years later, she was walking. She was walking 2 miles a day for, I think, 2 to 3 years. And then all of a sudden, along comes COVID. Her kids pressure her, you know, to get the jab. Fully, you know, they were well-intentioned, right? So she had had a clear MRI in January. Totally clear. Doctor said, I don't need to see you until next year. She said, I don't want to wait that long. Let's do it again in August. He said, okay, I'll schedule it for August. In May of that same year, she gets the jab. She goes in for her MRI in August. She's a golf ball-sized tumor. Long story short, she's now in hospice care and, you know, not doing well.
I'm sorry.
You know, but what's interesting is that I met another person
mm-hmm.
who also went to the same doctor, had the same surgery, and that doctor told her that since the pandemic, he used to do the surgery 2 to 3 times a month. He's doing mm-hmm. it 2 to 3 times a week. That's a 430% increase in just pancreatic cancer.
Is he recommending or not recommending the COVID jab, or does he have an opinion on it?
I think they're keeping they're trying to dance around it and keep their mouth, their like non-opinion. They don't push anything.
How can you not have an opinion?
Well, they seem to, apparently, because I know that was the question I asked my friend, and she said, well, he didn't exactly answer me directly when I asked, should I get the jab? He kind of said, well, that's a choice you have to make, you know, and he didn't really come out and say, yes, you should, but he didn't say, no, you shouldn't, you know.
So, with a virus that does not affect seriously 99.95% of Americans, why would you vaccinate everybody, considering the effect of this is minimal, except for like the 100,000 most vulnerable people in the country out of 330 million? I mean, that's
a
rhetorical
question. And I'll put another question out there to you.
Mm-hmm.
Why, in the history of this country, for the first time, are we using one medication with the exact same dosages, no matter what your weight is, no matter what your height is, no matter what your health background is? Everybody gets the exact same dosages of remdesivir.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's
I thought you were going to say the COVID shot. That's never ever been done. Uh-huh.
And so when you walk in, they just assume you're COVID, right? I mean, they never tested me in the hospital. I just took this silly little home test once.
So what did you?
Why'd
you go to the hospital in the first place? Let's get that out there. What was your initial reason?
Well, because I had bilateral. I ended up with bilateral pneumonia. But I'm prone to pneumonia because I.
Bilateral.
Well, it's pneumonia in. It's pneumonia in both of your lungs. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And but anyway, that, you know, just lost my train of thought. Quick.
I'm sorry. We do that. I'm ADHD, so I always ask questions and keep interrupting. I'm sorry. But that's kind of how we do stuff around here. But yeah. So back to how you were in the hospital in the first place. You know, how you got on remdesivir for pneumonia. I don't see the connection.
Right. But, I was talking about the remdesivir. Well, what's interesting about remdesivir, as I said, is that nobody asks that question.
Mm-hmm.
Why is everybody being given the exact same dosage? Now, the only reason I know this is because I've interviewed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are commonalities, you know, amongst all of these people that you talk to.
How about that?
It all comes down to the same thing. You get remdesivir and you look in the medical records, and guess what? It's the same dosage. It's the exact same treatment. What doctor gives the exact same dosage to a 125-pound female at 27
mm-hmm.
and the, you know, 280-pound male at 62?
Yeah.
And never takes into consideration what their health background is. Now, when you
someone who's paid to do it, because that's the protocol, because the job depends on it, or the bonus depends on it, or both. I mean, I don't know if it's a carrot and a stick, or a carrot or a stick, but it's one of the.
It certainly isn't health care.
But no, I would never put those two words together. Well, let me ask you, and then we'll get Rebecca back in here.
Yeah.
But your journalist background. So how did you come to meet Rebecca, and what can you tell us about your journalism currently, previous, whatever? I'm curious.
Well, I'm actually not a journalist. I'm just, you know, retired. And I met Rebecca because I had gotten interested in, interviewing. There's a group that's doing some great work just interviewing people, and it's really testimonies. And I did a lot of outreach and talked with a lot of people beforehand just to kind of relax them, because reliving their stories is a very difficult thing to do. And Rebecca's was actually one of my first. And it was, you know, it was enlightening. It was difficult. It was difficult to hear. But then I went on to do well over probably, I don't know, 50, 60, something like that.
Wow.
And when I was in the hospital, I just had this, I just knew I had to do something to warn people. And so when I first got out of the hospital, I went to a friend of mine who has a podcast, Mark Kulak, with Who Satanic Live. Now, Mark is a political historical researcher who uncovered Eco Health Alliance a year and a half before anyone ever heard about it.
Oh,
so
wow.
Rebecca,
we need him on the show. Rebecca, we need him on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Pick a
yeah,
week.
He's definitely. But I decided to call Mark and ask him, because I'd been in his chat room for like, I don't know, 2 years or something. And I thought I would feel safe telling my story with him. And I did. So it is, it's on his, you know, podcast playlist. And, but subsequent to that, having heard all of these different stories I came across, you know, I participated in that, but I always knew that I needed to have deeper discussions, deeper conversations, similar to what you're doing. And around how we can take all this grief that we've been given, because it's the kind of grief that we've never had to really honestly look at other than 9/11. But this grief that people are experiencing is one never experienced before. This is intentional by your own government. I mean, it's happened in small groups. I mean, you know, we just look at the Native Americans, we look at, you know, Tuskegee, we look at, there are pockets, but a mass intentional, you know, killing of Americans. I mean, it's that could have survived. We've never seen anything like this. And like I said, when you just, if you don't believe any of it, just understand what the impact of giving one medication, choosing one medication, the deadliest out of the four that they had to choose from, they chose the deadliest, which attacks all the organs. And, you know, you can't live without your kidneys. And it doesn't take long before they begin to fail. Now, I contend that because I drank so much water, and I don't know this because I'm not a scientist and I'm not a doctor, I contend because I drank so much water continuously that helped me survive.
You flushed out the remdesivir before it had a chance to do much, is what I'm guessing. Does that make sense?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Do you know what remdesivir is and where it comes from? Like, we know penicillin comes from fungus, and it's great for antibacterial stuff. I think it's, and
well, it
we know where
synthetic.
Certain things come from. It's a witch now?
It is synthetic. It is
synthetic,
so I don't know. It's, you know, it's Gilead. It's manufactured by Gilead Sciences. And what's interesting about remdesivir, and actually Mark is the expert on the timeline, but Gilead, they started to manufacture, Dr. Rick Bright ordered the manufacture of remdesivir to begin before the first patient was ever diagnosed with COVID in the United States.
How about that?
Yeah. Interesting,
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting, because I've been looking. Oh, I actually pulled up the molecular structure of remdesivir. It's pretty available from PubChem, National Library of Medicine. The NIH actually has released C27H35N508P. I'm sorry, say that again?
I said that trusted agency.
Oh, God, a bunch of, you know, I call them the Dr. Fascist and the health Nazis. you know. But yeah, here it is. It's carbon, hydrogen. I guess that would be nitrogen, oxygen, and P, phosphate maybe. It's a complex molecule, but it's an organic chemical. This is remdesivir, is an antiviral nucleotide analog used for therapy of severe novel coronavirus. All right, that's their propaganda. Let's see what it is.
If you look into the trials of remdesivir when they first used it against Ebola, the least effective was remdesivir. The most effective was ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine.
Of course it was. Well, see, but
and
I can explain.
And
it
in
real
order
simply.
To well, here's the important thing. In order for remdesivir to be authorized for emergency use, they have to prove that all existing drugs or treatments don't work. So what they did was they kind of set up the ivermectin trials and the other so that they could basically say they don't work, and we have to go with remdesivir. Now, oddly enough, we only have what I think it's like 5%, less than 5% of the world's population, 20% of the deaths from COVID. Now, when you look at India,
that's because we have 70% of the world's money. You know, I mean, that's why.
You know, they used you have India that used ivermectin, and in one province alone, they had zero deaths.
Yeah, was it Penn something or other? It starts with a P. I remember this. So just to let you know,
I can't remember the name of it.
You're talking to the converted here. You're preaching to the choir. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying that I had the DB Roulette study in Marseille, France, back in March or February of 2020. I wrote the bill that said that Congress can't, you know, they have to do that. I had Dr. Zelenko on the show mid 2020. We wrote a bill to reform the FDA in August of 2020. We had all this stuff done in March 2021. I had a bill for full product liability back on Big Pharma. So we're on the cutting edge of this and always have been. And so I explained
and
it very
ahead. I saw that, and I want you to know that there are people out in Arizona who have your website and have used it as a guideline and been very successful in getting through the state in Lori Cederstrom in getting through to the state house there. And I strongly believe that this has all got to be, if we have to generate this, it has to come from the grassroots. It has to come from legislation in the state house. I mean, here in New Hampshire, we were probably one of the first to outlaw vaccine mandates and also to take, to make the registry optional as opposed to mandatory for immunization on a statewide level. We also got ahead of the game and, you know, said no vaccine passports. Now, the trick with legislation, as you well know, is you can pass a good bill, but then it goes to the Rules Committee, and then they play the games. They put in phrases.
I've been doing legislation since college. Yeah, I know all the games. But
you know
this
the games,
why...
and I would love to have you talk about all of that stuff. We'll talk offline because
sounds like you need your own report too. I mean, I got a lot of space right now for reports.
Oh, I do. I'm in the process. I just started my first did my first episode, and we broadcast it on Sunday. We've got over 1,000 views already, so I'm optimistic that we can help. I just want to be just like everyone else who's been touched by this. Take action and let's get the word out, because the hardest thing to do is convince someone who's never been through who's never lost anyone, or like myself, who's been rolled through those hospital doors and found behind it an entirely different mindset and protocol as to any other time in your life. It just literally has been flipped on its head.
Yeah, because I went through heart surgery in 2016. And it was right before, I remember, because, you know, I got out 2 days before Trump was elected. So, I mean, it was October 27th of 2016. Wow. I had the open heart surgery. I was out, you know, about a week later or something. Well, I'm glad I got it then. I wouldn't want it now. You know, so, I mean.
Therein lies the problem. A lot of people, as a matter of fact, here, I always chuckle because there's a hospital here in Manchester, a very well-known hospital in Manchester, New Hampshire. And they are advertising their cardiac unit about how good it is. I think people who have problems are just saying, I'm not ready to go in yet. You know,
well, I'm sure they're not. And that's one of the biggest mistakes. And here's the, I want to get Rebecca back in here too, but Rebecca, you're going to get infinite amounts of weeks of reports. So I don't want you to feel like, you know, you're being neglected here.
No. Marie's
okay, good.
No, Marie's a wealth of knowledge too. So I'm glad she has the opportunity to speak.
Yeah. Well, good. But my situation was, like I say, I got five separate opinions, including Stanford Medical School. One of their top cardiologists looked at all my charts and EKGs and all that kind of stuff and said, yep. And they all said the same thing. So you get five experts. You know, at that point, I think, you know, I think they're right. But my what they were saying was if I didn't get the mitral valve repaired, I was headed for myocarditis and a swollen heart. And they said, you got a 1 in 5 chance of being dead in 5 years. And that would have been 2 years ago. And so I thought at the time, you know, okay, I'm not one for surgery or doctors, but I did consent to this because it made sense. So I went through it. Then they almost killed me 3 weeks later with blood thinners. Of course, I'll never take them again, you know. And but then when COVID came along, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. You know, what's really going on here? But there was a change. And we should talk about the change between my surgery, which went well, where they were actually, I just thought they were trying to overdose me on painkillers and get me addicted to opiates, as they were all doing at that time, because all the hospital surveys, you know, said, if you have zero pain, then you're doing a good job. I'm like, no, how can I know if I'm moving in the right way after heart surgery, if I don't have at least a little bit of pain as a guide? So I did my own pain medication regulation. I took about half to a quarter of what they were recommending, first a half and then down to a quarter. And I was fine. And I always had a little bit of pain, but I used that pain to make sure I didn't move the wrong way and, you know, tear stitches and do bad stuff and all the other kind of things. But their idea of zero pain was they, you know, if I taken as many painkillers as they wanted, I'd be a hydrocodone addict within 3 weeks.
Oh, sure.
You know,
well,
and
they want to turn you into a legal drug addict for the pharmaceutical companies.
Exactly.
It's so evil what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, Rebecca, let's get some commentary from you. So of all the stuff going on first, what's happening here, and we do have another guest at the top of the hour, otherwise I would, or my reporter, otherwise I'd keep you guys on for another hour. But tell me what you think so far. How comments, things we should be talking about. What do you think?
About the website?
About anything.
Whatever you'd like to talk about. Yeah.
Let's talk about the website.
Well, I think
that'd be good.
Okay, yeah. So I think I have like about 10 reviews there right now on the website, which is important because, as I said before, people need to know which hospitals are safe to go in. They have sick people every day, and we really need to push this forward. I'd like it to be like a VAERS report where you could go on to, you know, VAERS and see what drugs have, you know, side effects or death effects. So doing the website and getting a platform, you know, to expose this evil is where I'm at. And also, you know, yesterday we had the meeting with the Trump team, which Marie could tell you more about too.
I forgot all about that. Oh, I can't believe I forgot about that. Tell me about it. Tell me what you can tell me. Because I want to, because everything's podcast forever. So tell me what you can tell me.
It's really showing the Trump team the block of voters they could lose if they don't do something about this. Little words.
This is huge because I've criticized Trump ever since he let Dr. Fascist push him off the stage. The whole pandemic crisis response team was an Obama protocol, an Obama plan. The pandemic playbook was given to Trump, you know, by Obama. So I know this is all pre-planned. I know they changed the pandemic guidelines from the 2007 guidelines to the 2017 ones 3 months after Trump took office so they could go to full lockdown without their pandemic severity index. I mean, I researched all this stuff. And so I knew it was planned 3 years ago because I had the evidence for how they changed the guidelines. So, but Trump was totally duped. He was doing fine when he was with Dr. Zelenko. He had the right protocol. He had the right information. Peter Navarro had 80 million hydroxychloroquine tablets he was going to distribute. That would have knocked COVID out in about 3 weeks. There would have been no vaccine, no need for it. None of this stuff would have happened. The protocols would have been canceled. The Center for Medicaid Services would not be able to, you know, ship out $150,000 per death. You know, none of this stuff would have happened. But he went with the wrong people. But he's got to account for that, and he's got to admit that to the public. He's got to say, I screwed up big time. I am sorry. I used the best information I could, but now that I know the truth, we're never going to let this happen again. That's what he needs to say.
Yeah.
Go ahead, guys.
If he wants to win the election, go ahead, Marie.
I just wanted to say that when we put this together and Meg Skinitis actually. She worked 10 months to get 1 hour before the Trump team. And when we finally put the presentation together, one of the points that I told Meg we needed to make sure we had is that Trump doesn't have this in the bag. And he's got to know that there, well, she calculated it out of all the people affected, people who've died, extended families, backs injured, extended families. We're talking about a block of 42 million voters.
Yeah.
And that as long as they keep this quiet, they don't talk about it. Here's the key thing that a lot of people will overlook. They run the risk during the primaries of having independents choose a Democratic ballot to vote on as opposed to a Republican ballot, because you've got Bobby Kennedy now running, and he's been openly talking about vaccines for years and years. And the question is, how entrenched is he with, you know, the establishment? The question is, how entrenched is Trump? They have a problem. They all have a problem, whether it's Kennedy or whether it's Trump or whether it doesn't matter who. This is a huge block of voters, and they're going to have to address it, going to have to say the word Remdesivir, and if they don't, they're going to have a lot of people, especially the independents, looking at this and saying, I mean...
Well, let me tell you a little Action Radio action. Dr. Judy Mikovits is a personal friend. I gotten to know her she was with us 18 weeks in a row, as well as a bunch of other folks like Dr. Brian Artis, some guests like Peter Corey dropped in, some other folks were in with us, but the regular group, Ben Marble, some other people, Jim Thorpe, you know, the big folks involved with all this. And she knows Bobby Kennedy personally. They're friends. I mean, Bobby has done forwards to her books. You know, she just talked about that. So I'm hoping, and I've already talked to Judy about this, and I've talked about this on the show, so it's not a big deal. I want Bobby Kennedy to endorse our vaccine product liability bill and our big tech censorship bill. And I want Trump to do it too. I want them both to do it.
Yeah, they're going to have to
care,
do this.
But I'm nonpartisan. I don't care about parties. But the beauty of this election, this is the first election where the two major candidates are hated by their own parties. I mean, who's the deep state going to cheat for? And think about this for a second. Who's the deep state going to cheat for? They don't want Kennedy and they don't want Trump. They want an establishment person. They want a Mitt Romney or a George Bush or a Biden or an idiot, the idiocracy. They want people they can manage.
They want
can't
the
manage
cackler.
These two. What's that?
I said they want the cackler. They want Kamala Harris. I actually think I've said this for years. I actually think that they've been paving the way for Hillary Clinton to make a comeback. That's what I think.
Well, yeah, but everybody hates her. First of all, men won't vote for Hillary Clinton. I've said this before, and I've taken a lot of criticism, because Hillary Clinton sounds like every one of our ex-girlfriends and ex-wives. She just does. Nobody. Men don't want to listen to Hillary. I'm telling you right now. Men don't want to listen to Hillary Clinton. You know, it's like, oh, God, I know who she reminds me of. Oh, geez, I don't want to go through that again. So, yeah.
Well, there are a lot of women that don't either. I mean, you know, that's the craziness. But, you know, they... First of all, they're so out of touch with everybody. They're so out of touch, and they're so sure of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, this is what they're finding out in France and the Netherlands and everywhere else around where people are rising up.
Hey, Marcos in the Netherlands, We have a guy from the Netherlands on live chat right now too. So we're Marco's with us most of the time for our shows. So we'll see if he types in something from there. So tell me. Oh yeah, we're in 50 different countries. You'd be amazed where we are. Armenia, you know, Cuba, Vietnam, all these places that we broadcast to. It's fascinating. So here's the question.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's great. Yeah. So we just need a lot more. So can if you can reveal anybody in the Trump team that's public, or if not, that's fine. I understand. I'm just curious. We can talk off the air. And I do respect,
I can tell,
you know, off the record. Go ahead.
I Go can ahead. Tell you, I mean, they're the people that talk to the grassroots, you know, that sift through and decide, okay. you know, what, mm-hmm. Who they're going to listen to. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a discussion. It was basically, okay, here's our pitch.
Hmm.
So we had to create a presentation that basically says, listen, we got 42 million possible voters here.
Mm-hmm.
You think you might want to address these issues.
What'd they say?
Because,
can you tell me what they said?
Well, they don't speak. They don't comment. They didn't have any comments. They just thanked us, you know, and that they were going to be taking the information back to, you know, the campaign. So, you know, you don't know. And I wouldn't actually, if I were running the campaign, I would be saying the same thing.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
You don't want to lay your cards. You know this. You've been around long enough.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, I want to talk to these people if at all possible. But secondly, I've had Peter Navarro and Christina Bob on the show, and I've talked about vaccine product liability legislation and ending big tech censorship. They know about these bills, both of which said they would take it to Donald Trump. So they know about what we do.
Well,
you know, several people in the Trump administration know about
Trump.
Go ahead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But the last, you know, his entire administration, you know, that there's a lot of stuff that were, quote, given to him that I don't think he ever got. Given the attacks on him, and I'm not a big Trump. I want you to know I'm not a giant, like, Trump fan. I'm independent. Like, I got to look at everybody and everything, you know. But just the fact that they've done what they've done with him, I mean, it's not about Trump. It's about the office of the presidency. And that's what bothers me most.
Yeah, yeah. See, I am a Trump fan.
It's the undermining of it.
Yeah, I'm a Trump fan because I didn't realize this until after he was elected. But I sort of thought, you know, years ago that if I had to pick my ideal presidential candidate, they'd have to be incredibly honest. That have to be uncorruptible, that have to be unbribable. You know, in other words, they had so much money that they weren't bribed.
Well, that's why I ended up voting for Trump in 2000.
But they still have to be a decent person who loved America. And that was Trump, all that criteria.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he fought. He fought in spite of all of the stuff that was coming against him. He kept moving. I found it very interesting that he signed that. I think he signed that bill whether it's an executive order about reducing the cost of drugs just before Biden went in, and Biden came in and knocked everything out. And then he takes credit for it 2 years later. I mean,
well, Biden just does what
these
he stole
are the little.
From... Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
Well, what do you think is going to happen then with Trump? Do you think they're seriously going to do their mea culpa? I mean, I've noticed already in the rallies, he's not talking about warp speed. He's not talking about the vaccine being safe and effective. He's not talking about it at all. The only thing he said something about if there were mandates on colleges where students had to get a vaccine, he wasn't going to defund them. That's the only thing I've heard in the last rally.
Well, it'll be interesting to see as a result of this, because I'm going to open the door. I'm happy to talk to any presidential campaign manager floating around New Hampshire, because I think that, you know, it's going to be a very key component. They don't realize the numbers. They haven't sat down and actually thought about it. And I think that's what our presentation just threw them for a loop, because Scott Shera was there, who lost his daughter Amazing Grace.
He's been on the show. I know Scott.
Yeah. Well, Scott was part of that presentation. So was Curtis Bay, and so was who was the third person? Rebecca, I'm missing somebody.
Mexican.
And Dr. Gafanti. Dr. Gafanti out of Florida. You know. Mm-hmm. There were three speakers who had, you know, who talked about the impact. Dr. Gafanti is a survivor Certainly, you know, Scott Shara's story, and then Curtis Bay, who lost his wife for 40 years.
Wow.
So
yeah,
it was very, the impact was huge, I think. I think they're going to, let's put it this way, it was more than worthy of them taking it back to the higher-ups, if you will, in the campaign and saying, we need to rethink this.
And if one thing I want to add is the...
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Sorry, one thing I want to add is what Meg did was the... and Curtis Bay was talking about the RICO Act.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That they're doing, they're trying in Arizona right now, that Giuliani had started in New York. The RICO Act. Marie could probably tell him a little bit more about that.
Well, I think Greg knows more about that than I know.
Oh, okay.
Well, I know about the RICO Act. I don't know what the latest is. I may have to get up and close my windows. My neighbors appear to be hammering. So my beautiful birdies that started the show are not here now. The sun's up and they're still getting active. But other than that, like I say, I'm going to go see my congressman. He's got a new district office that's a lot closer. He knows. He's known for 2 years. This is Matt Gaetz. And, you know, Matt Gaetz has Trump on speed dial. So I do not understand.
He is someone who will listen.
Well, see, and this is the thing. This is why I want to talk to him. Because I do, and I've talked to him personally, but there's minions in the way. There's every member of Congress has minions that are visionless idiots that don't, sorry, Trump. I mean, sorry, yeah, Matt, but your staff, you know, but it's not just his staff, it's everybody's staff. I can't get past the minions. Because when I talk about citizen legislation, I might as well be talking about aliens with three heads. They don't get it. They don't understand the power of what we've got here. I've got a bill that could put big pharma, that could take every vaccine off the market. And that Ed Dowd confirmed that to us. He says, look, you get product liability on these things, they're gone from the shelves. Nobody's going to have to worry about this anymore, and we'll do what we're supposed to do with diseases, treat them or leave people alone.
Yeah.
And
well,
so,
I will tell you how Lori in Arizona got through that all of that.
Who's Lori
she
in
went
Arizona?
There. Lori Cederstrom, she's very active. She set up the website 1000widows.org with Curtis Bay. And
all you folks are
going to
get together.
Active.
Yeah, I can tell all you folks are going to get together on this. Yeah.
Well, we pretty much are. And, but when she went to present to a staff member, she laid it on the table, and I said, I told the gals in the people who presented to people in Oklahoma, I said the same thing. I said, you bring your pictures that you have of your husbands, and I said, until the appropriate time when they don't think they're going to believe you. And all Lori did was slide a whole notebook across the table and sit back. She didn't even say anything to this guy, you know, to the aide. And he looked at it and he just was so shocked, that's what you want. You know, you want to get the message across, and sometimes a picture's worth 1,000 words. You know, and, you know, actually that the whole thing got sent off to is it Swigert's office in Washington, D.C., the, you know, Arizona U.S. Senator. And so they keep in touch with her. And now when she walks through the halls of the Arizona State House, I always tell her, I said the building trembles.
Well, I've got a friend that we had to Wendy Rogers on the show. So, I mean, I have a connection to the Arizona State House. I got a friend of mine, Tina Terry, who's been on the show several times. She knows all kinds of folks in Arizona. So that's a good place for us to go.
Lori. You want to talk to Lori. She's the mover and the shaker behind it.
Let's get us connected here, you know, off the air, and then we'll get her on the air. But the most important thing from my view – and I got Bianca in line. I'm going to bring him on in just a second. I got Candace for the next report. But the most important thing, I think, is that every one of these websites has to have the link to vaccine product liability and ending big tech censorship. Because the thing that killed people was the lack of freedom. I'm going to do a Substack on this pretty soon. I have gregpenglis.substack.com. In fact, I post my entire vaccine timeline. All the information that I collected over the course of about 3 years, I put in this timeline. Maybe it's 2 years. Anyways, a lot. So you can just trace things all the way back to the VAERS, to the original Vaccine Act, and to the Bayh-Dole Act that allowed government employees to make tons of money off their inventions, which they shouldn't do.
Right, but remdesivir is the key, because if you don't have remdesivir, you don't have vaccines.
Why is that? How's that connection?
Because you have to have the number of deaths. You have to scare people. You have to fearmonger people into getting that vaccine. And you do that by having a lot of people die.
Because COVID wasn't that serious. COVID didn't kill enough people.
That's right.
That's right.
And now they're trying to give it to kids. They are creating their own they're creating their own target market.
I still think Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Hill police officer, was killed by the jab. So let's get this here, and I'm going to get to Pianki, then I'll get to Candace. So if they can kill this is what the lockdowns and the masks were all about, was preserving COVID, not preserving people. See, COVID
That's
ended.
Correct.
I got the CDC chart that shows that COVID ended mid-July of 2020. It was done. The death rate was heading for zero.
Now, if you give everybody the same poison, remdesivir, which breaks down the organs, you can call it COVID because people had the – don't forget the flu disappeared that year.
Oh, I see. I see how this works. So people go, thinking
now,
they have COVID.
You see where I'm going? They had to create the appearance of this COVID, this virus being deadly. Well, that's the reason why everybody got the same dose. It was toxic. It was going to create renal failure, acute renal failure. It was going to attack other organs. And then they called it, people are dying of COVID. They weren't dying of COVID. They were dying of a deadly protocol using remdesivir, then venting, and then people dying. And after that, they scared people enough that they would drive people by the carloads to open fields where they would get jabbed with an unknown toxin, never tested.
See, it's all part of the market. It's a marketing plan, a bioweapon. We call it here the remdesivir ventilator death march, and I've been calling it that for about a year. Let me get to – I got to hold you up a little bit. I want to get Pianki, see if he has a question for you, and then I want to get to Candace because this is her hour. And Marie, if you want to come back next Wednesday, too, feel free. We've got a lot to talk – thank you, Candace. Pianki, you're on with Marie Clark and Rebecca Charles. Question? Comment?
It sounds like the Democrats want to have a government – make people do what is popular for their constituents, pharmaceuticals, mad scientists.
Well, Democrats used to hate big pharma. Wait a minute. I mean, and Republicans are just as bad. They're not stopping this either. So let's talk about partisan. What happened to Democrats? They hated big pharma.
Every prostitute had a price.
Oh, is that what it is? Marie?
I'm sorry. What was that?
Well, I said the Democrats used to hate big pharma. In fact, they used to go after the insurance companies, saying that the insurance companies were not taking pre-existing conditions and people were dying because insurance companies weren't paying for the treatments that they were supposed to get. Now they love big pharma. In fact, they are big pharma, supporting both big tech and big pharma.
Well, take a look at FDA. When you're done with FDA, where do you go? You go to sit on the board with a high-paying job of big pharma.
Yeah,
I mean, this is an endless cycle. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. It's just an endless cycle at the top. Now we're getting into the idea of, lobbyists having control of the government. That's really what we've ended up with. And what I want to see is forget term limits. I really want to see no money from big pharma involved in the United States government, and no official who leaves office should be taking a job for at least 5 to 10 years.
How about
with
ever?
Big pharma.
I have a bill idea.
Ever would be wonderful.
I think you're the person to write it. I think you're the person to write it. And that
you
got to
do
if
is,
hold on a second, Pianki.
Louisiana just passed a bill like this.
Oh, they did? Okay. Which, in that case, go ahead. What's the bill? Do you have the bill number, or can you send it to me, or did you already? You probably did. I get stuff from Pianki all the time.
They got several bills like that where outside money can't be used to influence, and that sort of way. I don't know the exact wording. You can't identify a children with pronouns. It gives back fundamental rights to parents. A sheriff can't go into a church and tell them to stop having service because of a pandemic. they passed some very, very good bills.
Let's. Those are good. I want to take those up. I want to take them up next week, though, because I want to get going. Hey, Candace, do you want to get into this conversation, or have you got some topics that we can get to in a shorter amount of time? Because we're on a kind of a roll here.
Yeah, actually, I am completely fine with doing this morning. It sounds fascinating. I wish I would have gotten on a little bit earlier, but so we can keep going with this. Works for me.
Okay, let's stick around for a little bit, and then maybe at the bottom of the hour we might switch over a little bit, and I can always run a little bit overtime if Candace has the time for that. Candace, I keep forgetting the name of your organization. I don't want to mess it up. What's it called again?
It is Believe the Journey Horse Services.
There we go. And so that's what we talk about here. So we're going to talk horses and nature and philosophy and life and all kinds of things. That's Candace's report, which actually goes along. It's the opposite of what we're talking about this hour, which is death by government. So what I want to do with Marie and Rebecca is, if at all possible, get our two bills, again, vaccine product liability and ending big tech censorship, onto all the websites of all the folks that are doing what you guys are doing, like with Rebecca's website, Death by Hospital Protocol, because that's the answer. You know, changing the politicians doesn't change anything, because you trade one politician for another one. So I realized that I started Action Radio back in 2014. So this isn't something that I just woke up this morning and did. And so I realized that the only way you're going to make major change, you have to change the laws, because whoever controls the laws controls the country. Right now, the government controls the laws, and they're using them against us. So what we need to do is to write the laws that we consent to be governed by, and take the laws to the people first, then to the media, and then to the government. The government's the last place that the laws go to. That we're proposing. We already need the support. In other words, we want them pre-approved before they get to government. So government, all right, who's making breakfast? I'm hearing getting noise in the background.
Hi. Sorry.
Is that you? Is that Candace?
That's me.
That's Rebecca.
Where do we get the horse? Or is it Rebecca? Okay.
Sorry.
We had a horse last time, Winnie, big time. It was kind of cool, too. All right. So, yes, I don't mind you making breakfast, but just mute yourself. I was on a roll, too. What was I talking about? Anyway.
You were talking about everybody connecting with your legislation. Yeah.
People first.
Your bills.
Got to go to the websites. Got to go to the people. Got to build a consensus. The people then share with the media. The media starts reporting on the stories. Then the media shares with the pollsters. The pollsters start polling on the stories. And then they go to the actual government folks themselves, the representatives, the senators, you know, the state reps and the local government and things like that. But this is what people don't understand when they ask, well, haven't you passed a bill yet? I said, no, because the people, we don't have the people on board yet. We've got to get the people on board. And that's you guys and all those websites. Go ahead.
And they didn't start off by we the people by accident. I mean, we the people is an incredibly powerful phrase beyond what we think superficially, because now you're getting into what you're talking about is really the crux of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's the grassroots. It has to come from your neighbor. And your neighbor and your diner, you know, when you get together, I'll tell you, I go to a little diner every week for breakfast with a friend.
Call us from there. Get the owners on the show. I'm serious about this. I'd love to have a diner report, because diners are where the world is decided. I love diners.
Oh, absolutely. And in New Hampshire, like if you aren't at that diner, you know,
I might have been. What's the name of the diner? I might have been there.
Well, it's called Deja Vu.
Oh, isn't that funny? Okay, so I want the owners on the show. I want the owners. I want to hear their story. And I want to just talk to the local customers. You know, do like Josie does. Josie will go to rallies and go to different places. Josie's our Latino reporter. She grew up in Nicaragua. And she'll just go around and pass the phone around and say, who wants to be on the radio? I'm serious.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I could talk to her about it and ask her about it because, of course, I would always do that. But, you know, it's interesting because when I've talked about something, I don't know, I was explaining to a friend of mine, I think it had something to do with, the pandemic treaty at the time. Mm-hmm. And this woman walks over and got up. She finished her breakfast. She walks over to me. She said, excuse me. She said, I just want to thank you. I said, what for? And she said, I just listened to your explanation, and she said, you're the first person that actually I can understand what they're talking about.
That's
and
wonderful.
I laughed. I didn't even remember what I said, but In any case, I was explaining it to this friend of mine. And but that's how people, it's funny, you know, people start talking to each other at diners, especially in New Hampshire around, you know, it's getting hot up here already. Everybody's starting. DeSantis has been here. Trump's going to be here. And I saw that Bobby Kennedy on WMUR, which is the major television station in New Hampshire, he got on and said New Hampshire's key for him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's
well, he was on Tucker,
a lot of time in New Hampshire.
I think it was on Tucker Wednesday night. And so I saw that presentation. That was wonderful. So Fox News already has – well, not Fox News. Tucker's different. I separated him from Fox News. But he had Kennedy on for a few minutes. He talked about Bobby Kennedy. We're going to get – someday I hope to have Bobby Kennedy on the show here. But that's not as important, quite honestly. I don't need the fame. I do need the ratings, but I don't need the fame. Well, let me put it a bit, in a different way. I need him to endorse our bills because it's the bills that count.
Exactly.
You know, I need the public recognition.
This.
Yeah, exactly. To make the show bigger.
I mean, who cares about the public recognition? I really want to. I want to make sure my grandchildren don't live under medical tyranny.
Right.
That's what I want. It's pretty personal, you know. I don't want to see my friends dying. I don't want to see my family, you know, most of whom don't even understand what I'm doing. You know, one out of all the rest of them.
What don't they understand? What's
well,
what's
they've
the,
all
what's
got
the
vaccinated.
Gap?
They're all scared to death, and they think mom's a drama queen. What can I tell you?
What are they scared of? Oh, that's well, no, I think you're fabulous.
Well,
I'm
you know,
on
one lives in,
what are they scared of?
One lives in Vermont, so very heavily impacted by Bernie Sanders. You know, they march to the tune, and they don't. I have a son who said, well, mom, maybe your experience was just an aberration. I said, how can you say that? I said, there are umpteen people who've come out. I sent him a website. I mean, all these people who are experiencing the same thing across the country can't be an aberration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he's all jabbed up. And what can I tell you? There are a lot of people out there. I don't think until I rolled through those hospital doors, I had the same mindset as my kids have and my family has, which is doctors don't harm you. Hospitals are good places, you know. And
I was suspicious.
This is why it's really hard for people to understand this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, my hospital experience.
You know, you're asking them to turn their whole life experience with hospitals on its ear because you have a bad experience. And that's how they think of it. And that's why it's so difficult to talk with families.
Yeah, see, I had a couple of bad things with hospitals at an early age. So I woke up on the operating table when they were taking my tonsils out because they didn't give me enough stuff. And I hear the doctors, oh, he's awake. Do something. I'm like, huh? So I didn't trust doctors from then on. So I've always had a bad experience. Let me get Candace in the show here. Cowgirl Candace is our horse person out in nature. Totally different environment than we're talking about here. But, you know, incidentally, we talked about actually ivermectin, you know, being horse paced. Well, she actually has horses, so she uses it. But to Candace, just you don't have to talk about that, but just general impressions so far. Folks, you know, experiences. I think everybody's been touched by this government tyranny. At some point, do you want to throw something in here?
I mean, yeah, I definitely. That's why I really enjoy the show and listening to these when I have time, because I'm, you know, in my generation we don't really talk about any of this, and this is how I feel, you know, and getting more in depth and listening to people that are out there trying to fight against it just helped me with my decisions too, you know, and like she was saying, you know, I don't even want to have to deal with the healthcare system where it is. And honestly, right now, I don't have health insurance because it's all a scam. And in my mind, you know, they're going to get you either way. I mean, if I can pay out of pocket, I can. But I just, you know, and maybe it's just the horse girl type in me that I'm like, if I can heal myself, I'm going to heal myself and not go to the doctor unless I'm actively dying, and then you might still have to convince me at that point, because I just don't have any trust in our system at all, you know, and the protocols that they have to abide by, and people just can't follow truly who they are, and they can't really follow truly how they want to treat people because of the protocols that stand in the government and the way Big Pharma is, you know. So it's, you know, it's such a I felt the same when we switched over to corporate in the vet field. You know, it was the protocols. We couldn't heal and treat the animals and the patients like we wanted to because we had to follow protocol. And to me, that's what really drove me out the door because I couldn't stay true to my heart. So I see how many people that are unhappy within themselves because, you know, we all have to make money and we have a passion and we want to do it. But, you know, when we go into these corporations or we go into these, the greed that comes with it, you know, it really changes us as a human. So it took me a while to walk out that door, but I said, you know, I got to stay true to my heart. So I just, I applaud the people that are coming on this show and really speaking up for themselves and for others because it's a trap door that we're in today's time.
Yeah. I want to hear from Marie and then Rebecca, and I got questions for both of you as well. Candace, thank you. Marie, how do we reach the younger folks? And what do you think of
that,
Candace?
Well, you know, that's my hope. I'm just starting, you know, a podcast, and I did it with Mark Kulak on Who's Atomic Live because, you know, I wasn't sure whether honestly a gray-haired 76-year-old woman was going to ever, you know, go over at all.
What, all that wisdom and, you've got? Are you kidding? Of course we want to hear it.
So, well, I have grandkids who are like, oh, well, you're kidding, you know. So you don't know. And so it kind of was like a test, but I laughed because this morning I woke up and we reached 1,000 views. And within four days, and I was very happy about that. But I think it's really important for young people to, unfortunately, history's being scrubbed as we speak, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for people to learn how to critically think. It's not being taught in the school system anymore. It's not even being taught. I mean, I am just astounded at the lack of basic knowledge. When I talk with people, I was talking with a young man who was getting his engineering degree, okay, structural engineering degree. I was looking for a car. He was doing this part-time. And I said to him, you know, I have a question for you. And he said, what's that? I said, because I'm always curious about the education level based on, you know, when it comes to civics. And I said, can you name the three branches of government? And he looked at me like deer in headlights. And
how
I
old
thought,
are we talking
oh,
about? How
we're
old
talking
is this person?
22 years old. 22 okay. years old.
Hmm.
And you know, he struggled. He said, well, there's the law. I said, yeah, that's the legislative branch. And he said, well, and then there's the place where the president is. I said, that's the executive branch. I said, they actually are responsible for, you know, executing the laws that Congress passes. And he said, and then the other one is the judicial branch. Now we are talking literally sixth, seventh grade, you know, history. There's just this lack of civics. There's just a total lack of civics education and they're voting at age 18. My hope is I would love to have you on doing a series of how to write a bill, what's involved.
Well,
I think
our website tells you
people,
that, but yeah, I'm available for Zooms and interviews. Yeah, just, you know, message me.
If I will, young people aren't getting this education. When I went to school in New York, I had one in seventh grade, you had community. You had your local town community history. In eighth grade, you had state. In 9th and 10th, you had world history, and in 11th and 12th, you had, you know, American history. Today, you're lucky if any kid gets one semester.
Well, see, this
of
by design.
Any kind of history whatsoever.
See, the whole purpose of, you know, the two things that have occurred to me as we've been talking. One, if anybody wonders how Hitler was democratically elected in Germany, just look at what's going on now and how easily the population swayed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. The second thing is that, Rebecca, you've been over our bills, right?
He also did it slowly.
Go ahead.
You know,
it didn't happen overnight.
Slowly.
Yeah. But Rebecca, and I want to get your opinion, if you have any response to Candace, especially with the younger folks. But in terms of the legislation, you've read our vaccine bill, I assume, and our product bill. If you haven't, if you're busy, I understand. But is there anything about those that's tough to understand? Is there anything that's incredibly confusing?
No, I don't think so, but I think we should teach this in the schools and the universities. As Marie said, they come out today and they don't even know anything. And that's very, very sad. America used to be a country where you strive to go to the universities in America. You know, you come out with the best diplomas, the best graduate students from all over. And now America University is coming out. What are they pushing out? I mean, I look at these kids being graduated and they don't know anything. So between medical tyranny and these bills, we need to be inform them as much as possible.
Well, that's what we do on our show here. In fact, not only do we teach government stuff, we teach all the problems in government, the things people don't know, that the Supreme Court cannot interpret the Constitution, that judicial review is illegal, that they're not there for lifetime appointments. They're only there for good behavior. In fact, they're not even called justices. They're called judges in the Constitution. We go over the basics.
Yeah.
Most people who think they know about government don't even know those basic things. Even the Supreme Court people,
correct,
who go before Congress for their hearings, they don't even either they do know and they don't care or they don't talk about it. I want to bring Pianki back in for a second here because Pianki, who discovered the show a few years ago, never written a bill, has I think two or three to his credit, but there's one in particular. Pianki, how did you find the process of learning about how to write legislation? Any problems?
Well, I've written bills before when I was sitting on the city council.
Oh.
But you know what's something that you should also consider?
What's that?
How many of you got good credit?
How many,
if you got good credit, Joe Biden, if you got good credit, if you got good credit, Joe Biden just put forth a legislation or a rule that if you got good credit, you got to pay extra per month for those who don't.
Well, how equitable. That's, I'll have to talk to Derek about that, our financial reporter, but that's definitely send me something. I think you probably did send me something. That sounds like something I want
to
take up Monday.
You have to pay at least 7% more on your home mortgage.
Really?
And other contracts where you have to, dependent upon your credit, you have to pay as much as 7% more a month on your home mortgage, and that money is to go for those who don't have good credit.
That's like those who pay
sounds
for the
like
student
a business
loans.
Opportunity.
Sounds like a corruption opportunity. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Let's
I was being kind.
Yeah. I think we can probably pick this up again Wednesday. I'll talk off the air, see if Marie, if you want to. Well, let's get like more comments from Marie and Rebecca. I think we can kind of sum up at this point. Then I want to get to Kansas. Sorry, Candace. I'm talking too fast. Can you tell? I get excited when I get into this kind of stuff. But where should we go from here? Marie and then Rebecca. So what, again, if you can put our legislation on all those websites, all those activists out there, and we should talk about, I guess it's Lori Cedar, what's her last name?
Cedarstrom.
I write badly. Cedarstrom. There we go. But, well, let me ask you once again, my nosy question. What are they saying about our website? What are they saying about our legislation? I have to know. This is like news to me.
Well, I think, you know, I think the ideal thing is to for us to continue to spread your word and about and I just to let you know, Lori had been I was having a conversation with her about being on your program and she said I was telling her about your website and she said, "You're going to laugh, Marie." I said, "Why?" She said, "Because I have that right I have it bookmarked." So
right
she's been using
com, right?
the website. She's been using your website in Arizona to help formulate the bills, formulated four bills. They have a hearing,
oh,
I believe,
so
at the end of
well, we
explained
how to write a bill. I mean, it's no big secret. You
yeah,
have an introduction.
Exactly.
You have the old bill,
and
you have the new one. Yeah.
She got hooked up with somebody from the Carrie Lake, an activist who also helped write bills with the Carrie Lake campaign. And so between your information and theirs, she was able to put things together. So that's why I said it will be an interesting thing. This is how we do it. We're going to have to do it one person, one conversation at a time.
Yeah.
We're one big happy family, but of course now I want to have Carrie Lake on the show. And I want to see if we can, or at least talk to our organization and see if we can get them some citizen legislation. This is good. Rebecca, I'm going to, obviously we're going to talk more Wednesday when we get you back on the show, but this has been fabulous. But I want to make sure that we get your comments in, and then I want to move over to Candace here. So Rebecca, comments, ideas, things we should be talking about, stuff on your website, anything.
Well, spread my website, but also, you know, start going in front of these hospitals, getting these doctors' pictures, advertising it as much as possible. For me, this is my mission. It's just to make people aware of these dangerous, you know, situations we have going on in the hospital. As Candace said, she's scared, and she's a young woman, and she doesn't even know. You know, she probably didn't have anybody hurt. So this is how much we need to educate people, and this is my mission.
Well, let's get your website and any contact information. I don't know if you have a public email or however folks get in touch with you, Facebook or something like that. So how do folks get the message to you, or can they do it right from the website?
Yeah, I have Facebook, and I also just opened up an Instagram account. And, you know, I'll give my phone number out to anybody who wants it. It's 917.
That goes worldwide. Before you do, just to let you know, it's podcast forever. Again, it goes to a lot of places. So if you get a call from Cuba, don't blame me, okay? I just want to let you know.
Okay, all right. I'll give my email address then. It's r for Rebecca, rcharles109@gmail.com. Email me anything, any stories, any reviews of any hospitals. We need to get them shut down. We really need to have a new healthcare system where it's safe, where we have people sitting on the boards who were injured and to say, okay, this is not going to be approved. Like Marie said, it was the same dose for every patient. My daughter was only like 110 pounds. How do you give her the same dose of remdesivir 10 wrongs as you give a person who's 250 pounds? I mean, it was premeditated murder, and this is my mission, is to expose this.
Yeah, Rebecca's going to be regular on the show. She's going to have a report Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Central Time. So we're going to talk to the people that have been victims of this, that know people, that, you know, we're going to get this out there. Her website, deathbyhospitalprotocol.com, just to make sure.
.com, yes. Yep,
yeah, okay,
that's
so,
it. And just go in, and it's very easy. Upload your review, upload the doctor's pictures, and we're going to get them. We're going to get them. They're going to be so scared to be on that website that they're going to run. That's what I want.
Where's the class action lawsuit? Where's the, you know, and I would also talk to Bobby Kennedy. Well, I have an idea. I think I mentioned this off the air. I think I could say on the air, too. I want to get you, Scott Shara, probably Marie, too, and Judy Mikovits on the show at the same time, because Judy's connected to everybody worldwide.
Okay.
You know? And so if Marie, do you know her story? Going back to Dr.
I
Fascist
do know
and
her story.
AIDS and
yes.
Okay, so she was on for almost 3 hours about 3 or 4 weeks ago when we had our second anniversary of our vaccine product liability bill and the fact that it isn't national news yet even. so Judy's a friend, but I would go directly to her email, which I can give you a public one, drjudy@therealdrjudy.com. That's her public email. And so I can get that to you off the air, too. I would contact her, tell her what you're doing, say that you've been on the show, you're a friend of me, and also see if we can get Bobby Kennedy involved. If the Chum folks don't want to do it, you know, or if they're not doing it as quickly, let's go directly to, you know, Robert Kennedy Jr. I mean, this is his thing. This is his passion. I want him to endorse what you're doing and what we're doing here with our legislation. Why not?
Yeah.
That would be great.
Key. It's
okay.
Key.
All right. Let's give you both a round of applause. Bree, do you have any contact information you want to give? Websites, Facebook pages, things like that, groups?
I don't. I'm actually in the process of setting up a lot of stuff, but I can send it to you later. And you know, but for now, people can contact me at loudonlady, L-O-U-D-O-N, lady. @gmail.com.
Just writing that down. Of course, you can always call us from the diner too. Don't forget that.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll have to put that on my list. That would be fun.
It sure would.
I think so.
Well, you two can stick around if you want. I want to talk to Candace a little bit, and because she has a little bit of time here. But Candace, you're always welcome to more time next week if we don't cover your stuff too. But thank you two both very much, Marie and Rebecca. Rebecca, I'll talk to you next week.
Thank
Marie,
you so
you're
much.
Always welcome. You're so
okay.
Welcome.
Thank
Marie,
you so much, Greg.
Bye. All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Rebecca. Whew. Thanks, Candace. We really appreciate the extra time. That was important.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, most of the time when I get on here, I'm like, oh, I want to talk about that stuff.
Well, is it, you know, sometimes there's nobody here. The last 2 days, the weird part is I've had to do 3 hours of solo radio because no one's been here, all my reporters. I had like five different reporters scheduled the last 5 days, and they were all the last 2 days, and they were all doing other things. They all had stuff happening, and they couldn't be here. Okay. But I don't want to talk for 3 hours. I want to listen to you guys and just ask impossible questions like I normally do, you know. Pianki's still here. Marie's still online. Marie was on the line. She just left. So it's Pianki, you, and me. So, Candace, what's going on in your world? What's happening?
Well, I guess the biggest thing is I kind of took a couple of days away from the horses and just really went farther into nature. So it's not, you know, my horses are one of my main passions, but I also, you know, I feel like if my horses weren't a big part of my life, I would be like that crazy hippie girl that's like traveling in this crazy jacked up van, living out of the back of it, exploring the unknown. So I guess I just want to kind of speak about just my backpacking trip through Alabama, Cheeha State Park, and Talladega. Okay. I'm not sure if you've been out there, Greg, but it's just
no, I haven't. I have not. I've been cooped up trying to create this radio thing here in Florida, so I haven't gotten. I've barely explored this area because most of my time is spent working, unfortunately. Point me in the right direction. But I'll tell you though, I just see you, you know, with like bell bottom jeans and a tie dye shirt and like bangly things and the bandana and the blue sunglasses, you know, the round ones and then like a leather jacket with little tassely things hanging down when it's colder, driving a VW van that's painted 15 different colors. This is the image I have right now. Is that about right?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe that was one of my past life experiences, but yes, I would totally do that.
Okay.
Right now, you know, the horses are definitely my passion, but when I can't escape to go backpacking, I do, which it took me 2 years in the making to even go for 2 days away from the horses.
Oh, wow. So, you got to get away. You know, this is why I play guitar
instead of
doing – I love politics, but I need 2 hours of guitar a night just because. So where'd you go? What'd you do? What did you discover? How'd it go?
Well, we – went out on a whim. You know, we didn't really do as much. I went out there, just drove out there, Googled and researched the highest elevation in Alabama, and it found out it was only 4 hours from here. So back during Christmas, I kind of just took a day ride out and went and visited that park, and that's when I was like, it just hit me. I was like, if I'm going to backpack, this is where I want to backpack at. And so me friend, just out of the whim, we were supposed to take the horses packing out, and I said, you know what, we've talked about it for 2 years about backpacking, we still haven't done it, so let's just do it. So we went out there Monday, got there pretty late in the evening, but when we were at the parking lot, there was another hiker getting ready, and he asked me where I was going, and I said, well, you know, I'm really not the biggest planner in the world. I said, I just got to pack, and I figured
you got a compass in direction
Falls.
Or what?
Yeah, I said I figured I'd hit Cheeha Falls, and I've heard there's a camp shelter a little bit farther up from that, so that's probably going to be my goal today, and then we'll decide tomorrow when we wake up where we want to go and how we want to spend it. But he led me in the right direction as far as the falls and told me, he said, well, you really need to go see Devil's Den and go out to the lake. And I said, okay, well, that sounds like a good plan to me. So I'm grateful for that hiker who was doing a solo hike. He did 17 miles, and he was gone within the 2 days that we were backpacking. So I was like, man. So anyways, it was really neat. We got on the trail pretty late in the evening, and as we got on there, there was a photographer for a journalist from Anniston, Alabama, which was about a two-hour drive, and he was just so friendly. He was like, I'm out here taking pictures of the different flowers, and there's actually one that only blooms within 1 week, and it was out there, and luckily we got a chance to see that. And I'm not the biggest flower person. It's still cool to hear somebody just randomly stop and share their wisdom and educate us. And so it was just something that I found that I enjoyed throughout the hike. You know, looking for those pink slipper plants is what they were called, and getting
we
to know
need pictures
what
for our
called.
Environmental page. So feel free to
post to the
Action Radio Environmental Action Project. Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Yeah, I'd like to research a little bit more on it. But he was out there specifically to capture because they're so rare and they only grow in a certain area and they only bloom in 1 week. So I actually got to see the one that he pointed out to me, and then the last mile of the hike coming back Wednesday, I pointed out another one and got a picture of that. And it's just incredible to know, you know, what we walk past every day and never really, you know, think twice about it. So that was neat. And like I said, the mountain laurels are just all over the mountainside, and they're big, beautiful flowers. So
what do they look
I would
like?
Have never seen them. I'll
this
post
is radio.
This for you,
ooh, we need a visual.
Almost, I know. It's kind of an azalea bush, so they're really pretty and vibrant with white and pink on them. Some of them had a darker tint to them. And they flourished along the mountainside. So around the waterfall, along the mountainside, or along the rocks. It was just a beautiful sight to see, and it was even cooler now that I know what they're called. And so when we got to the shelter pretty early and then hung out at the falls and didn't really see anybody else that day. And then the second day with our big hike, we ended up doing 9 miles the second day. And let me tell you, 35 pounds on your back, if you've never hiked with 35 pounds, which I have not, 9 miles and one was a little...
I went to... hey, listen, I had a I'm not trying to top your story or anything, but when I went to Europe for almost 3 months, I think it was like a week short, I had everything I had in the world at the time pretty much in a backpack, and it weighed probably about that. So, yeah, I came back with shoulder muscles like you wouldn't believe. Now, the first week I died. It was horrible.
Yeah.
But I had a brand new pair of sneakers. I had a little extra weight on me, you know, and I had this backpack full of enough clothes for a month. Of course, I did laundry a couple times, but actually we ended up not doing laundry. We just traded clothes with other people. So we took their dirty laundry. They took our dirty laundry because it was different clothes. It was fun. Anyway, the point being that I came back 20 pounds lighter. I was completely muscular compared to what I left because I was carrying this backpack all over Europe, plus a day pack, and my sneakers were literally threads. They had completely dissolved because I was walking 25, maybe I figured about 20 miles a day I was walking, at least.
Ooh.
Or at least it felt like that. But I totally shredded a brand new pair of sneakers. So how much mileage does that take? And I wasn't going through rocks and everything else like that. But I understand carrying a backpack. Now my question is how rugged was this trip? Because people say, oh, I went camping. Well, how'd you do it? Well, we took the RV and we hooked it up to the electricity and the water, and then we had the picnic bench out front, and then we had the shelter we set up. We had the overhang veranda thing, and then they call that camping. No, that's not camping. Camping is when you take a backpack out into the woods, you pitch your tent, you catch your fish, you build your own fire. You start it yourself with maybe a flint. That's camping. So on the camping scale of RV, hookups to electricity and water, watching the movie at the campground, to literally, starting your own fire, where are you on the camping scale?
I would much rather be the one starting my own fire. So, of course, we did stay at the scout shelter the first night. Now, the second night, we did come back to the shelter, but we slept on the ground. Next to the fire versus the shelter, because we actually had other hikers join us that night. And we let them stay in the shelter, which was kind of funny because they were two army guys and the older gentleman, which, of course I would have given up the shelter. It was his first backpacking trip as well. So I knew.
How much older are we talking about?
He was probably in his 60s. So actually, he said he was 62. He said, I'm 62, and this is the first time I'm doing a backpack trip where I'm actually
packing
out my
own stuff. So that's what I was curious
about.
Yeah, so he's a year younger than me, child. Point being that it doesn't matter what age, as long as if you can walk, you can hike, and if you can carry a backpack, why not do it in your 70s or even 80s? So this is why I was encouraged. There's a big life change that happens with folks around 62 to 65. It's called retirement. So were you able to do things that you couldn't do when you were, raising kids and, doing all that other kind of stuff. So the two times is before marriage and kids and after marriage and kids, is when you can do pretty much anything you want. So there's a whole bunch of senior folks. This is why I say, get out, go camping, take that trip you've always wanted to take. Don't wait too long. Cause one day you'll be, on the porch, watching the sunset in your rocking chair, eating ice cream cones like Biden. But before that happens, between when you retire and the rocking chair days, you better go out and try some things like camping. This is why I think it's so important to talk about this. That's the serious part of it. The second part is it's fun. It's nice to get out in nature and get away from everything. So electronic devices, internet, cell phones, any of that stuff working at this point, or are you just abandoning all that for a couple of days?
Yeah, I just left it for a couple of days. I had it on me so I could take my photos and stuff, but we didn't have any service for the most of our trip. And it was nice to listen to the waterfalls down below. We went to bed when the sun sun went down, we came up when the sun came up, you know, and it was just, it really sets your natural time clock back even in that shorter stage. And, you know, just listening to the owls and the whippoorwills and, you know, just the nature right there at your feet, and then just, and feeling the cool air, it just, you know, it's such an addiction to me, you know, and going up to the shelter and then coming back to the waterfall, because we took our filtrated waters, so we had our filter system for our waters. Mm-hmm. And I
have to do that. There's amoebas and parasites and nasty things in the water. Yeah. Pianchi?
Yes.
When you guys was out in the woods, did you carry your weapons with you?
I did. So I always keep, you know, I do have my concealed permit, so I always keep my gun on me, especially being a woman. You know, it's, I feel a little different, you know, being, and even when the other hikers came, they were like, we don't normally see women alone out on these trails. And I know there is, there's not just me and my friend Annette, who's crazy enough to go out there and do our own stuff, you know. And, you know, the first night, you know, I went and picked up kindling that was around the area and hatcheted my own firewood, you know, and it was things that I don't think men think about women doing these days. And it was, you know, in fact, the second night when they were getting firewood, we were right there with them, and they had only brought a saw and I had brought the hatchet. So we, you know, we worked together, and it was nice to see other people get out and do that. And both the boys that were in the Army, they were around my age group, which was between their early 20s and, or late 20s, early 30s. And so it was just neat that we kind of educated each other on. There was a good moment where the one boy had a huge log, and he showed me how to break some, but he almost speared me in a net with the uh-oh, log that came flying back between me and her. You know, luckily we had good reaction, but, you know, it was stories like that that we got a good, you know, a good laugh at, and luckily none of us was injured, but we were like, okay, you know, obviously we can hang together. You haven't killed us yet. So, but I did bring my weapons out there, and normally how I sleep is I do keep that knife close to me, because you just never know. You know, I don't want to be too trusting in this world, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to be completely vulnerable out there.
Well, you've got
absolutely
animals and people.
And I used to go,
go ahead, Bianchi. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I used to go into the woods in the 70s before there was anything called concealed carry. I used to carry my weapons. Like you say, you never know, and some backpackers have come up missing, never to be found again.
Correct, yeah.
Now, yeah, California, I don't think you can bring weapons into the state parks, so there's a lot of places in the country where they're still run by, you know, Marxist liberal idiots where you can't do it. But I think Alabama, if you got a Florida permit, then I think that's good in Alabama, and we're actually getting rid of our permits. I think July 1st they expire. But can you go to Alabama, you know, when Florida doesn't have a permit, and still, is the reciprocity still there, where you can go to a different state and bring your firearms with you? Has that been determined?
I'm not really sure. I know that Alabama, and I might not know, I didn't do my research on it, but I've had friends that lived in Alabama, and they are an open carry, if I'm not mistaken. I could be completely wrong. That's what they
say.
But as far as the state park, I didn't see where it said no weapons allowed. Now, when you got into, there's a campground there where Cheeha State Park is, and there is a sign right there, and it's gated, that says no weapons and things like that. And, of course, you know, what do you do when you're traveling? Obviously, I can't leave my weapons down the road, you know.
Yeah.
So I with me anyway. So,
yeah.
And it's I've done that through several states and kept it on me, but I don't talk about it, you know. So it's one of
except
those
on the
things
radio
I think
to 50 different countries.
Yeah, that's fine. You know,
yeah, okay, good.
They can find me, whatever. But,
yeah.
I need to know in the back of my head that I'm protected.
Yep.
And that's how I was raised. So, of course, I'm going to keep my weapons on it, whether it's a pocket knife. I mean, even when I'm flying, obviously, I can't take my guns when I'm flying. But I do normally keep a knife or pepper spray on me or something. That way, it's a comfort for me knowing, you know, if something happened in a situation, that I have a little bit more than just my hands to protect myself.
Yeah. How about the fact that you've been riding trails for so many years? Do you have much more awareness of animals than other people, you know, than your, the friend you're traveling with, for example? Are you just more aware of what's going on in nature?
Awareness. You know, I'm constantly looking at tracks and different stats and listening.
That's poop, folks. Animal poop is a great indicator of what's walking by. Yeah.
You know, and just trying to keep myself aware of my surroundings as well as being with the horses and being even with Traveler, who went with me. That's my dog. There was a point on the trail where he had a couple of moments where he pointed out. So it gave us a bigger awareness of, okay, something's there that we necessarily can't see. He's aware of it. I think what he pointed out the first time was just a deer or something, but it wasn't anything big and scary, but it is nice to have more awareness with your senses than most people, because that's a big thing when you're going out there. It's not really necessarily humans that you have to watch out for, but it could be just the wildlife that's coming in, because you're stepping into their zone, you know, and sometimes we are at the wrong place at the wrong time, and we have to respect that and do what's needed when that time comes.
Yeah, I think people underestimate deer, especially male deer, you know, with antlers, you know, with a bad attitude, because, you know, people or elk or even or moose or, you know, because people are, you know, it's not the wolves that kill people up in Alaska, it's the moose, you know, for the most part, because they're big and, you know, and you think this big friendly animal, you know, bullwinkle. No, this is a multi-ton, you know, animal with, especially if it's a protective mother, you know, with calves or a male moose, and like I say, in a bad mood. Especially if it's mating season, you know, so people need to be aware of the seasons of these animals and what they're going through. And so a deer with antlers, you know, oh, isn't that pretty? Yeah, well, those things are sharp. They're made for a reason, you know, and I think people have to have a respect for nature that I think we've lost in a lot of ways. You know, things happen out there. You break an arm, it's a serious situation. Break a leg, it's a really serious situation. And you don't have your electronics. You don't have your normal comforts. And, yeah, you got health insurance, but what are you going to do when there's a copperhead snake staring you in the face? I mean, I passed one on my bike trail, you know, last year.
Yeah.
Still got the picture, you know, but I passed within 2 feet it was a water moccasin. Because on the trail, and I figured the best thing to do was ride as fast as possible, pass it by, and it hissed, and the mouth opened up, and boy, that's white. Cottonmouths have a really white mouth. I discovered that, but the speed of the situation kept me safe, because I, you know, but those are the things you have to decide. What is it best to do? And so, because there's no way to go around, the trail was narrow enough that it just, anyway, point being, you know, you're out there with the animals. You gotta, it is their environment. That's their home. You know, you go swimming in the Gulf, you know, there's sharks in the Gulf. Well, it's because it's salt water, you know, it's there, and they swim better than you do, you know. So I think people forget that, you know, the world is not a petting zoo, but you still have to get out in it. You still have to experience it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be scared. You can't be scared of it. I mean, there were so many spots that I was like, okay, well, this is a perfect place for a rattlesnake or a perfect place for a cottonmouth or or even, I mean, people don't even think about the ticks or the poison ivy or the poison oak. And so you have to be aware in those situations. You have to be aware of where you're placing your feet when you're in a rocky terrain. I mean, and even the current of the water out there in those springs, you know, those rocks are slippery and that water's strong. So you definitely have to be mindful and keep that respect and that awareness open, you know, and with people too. I mean, there was a part that even Annette was like, I don't know. I didn't realize that you've seen those people. And it wasn't that I seen the people coming up when we were on the rocks. It was, I noticed Traveler looking in a certain direction. And once I looked out that direction, you could see just the faint shadow of a person in the woods who was walking farther up on the trail. So I did hear Annette a couple of times point out, man, you can really spot the things that I haven't spotted in here. So I try my best to keep my awareness open when I'm in that situation, because I think at the end of the day, that's what's.
Do you know about edible plants, natural plants, and things like that, just in case the supplies ran low or something?
I actually have a book on order about herbal plants, but there's so many different edible plants in different areas, so it's hard when I haven't really studied one set area. I mean, I know there's a couple of different mosses that can be actual uses for antibiotics, and there's certain ones that you can make tea out of. But as far as me getting to that point in my life where I'm like, I'm going to go out there and literally survive on that skill, I have not managed that yet.
Well, I mean, yeah, some people literally go out with a knife and, you know, take on a boar, a wild boar. It's like, those people are really crazy, but, you know, that's a, yeah. or sharp sticks. Okay, I'm going to go kill my boar. I got my sharp stick and I got my knife for skinning and I'll be just fine. Thank you. And they'll build a fire. I mean, they're like MacGyver, you know, in the wild. Some people are crazy. Yeah. They're really good at it. You know, it's like, okay, me, I would rather have, you know, 44 Magnum for a boar, but I'm still going to, you know, find a way. I still like to learn how to hunt at some point. And, yeah. You know, one boar and one deer, and I think I'm done. That'd be good. I don't have to do a lot of this, but I should have the experience. And I always figured that if some, you know, butcher place is going to kill my meat and, you know, cut it for me, I should at least have done it once to know the process. It just seems to me, you know, something to learn. So have you hunted? Is that something that you grew up with? I think you did, if I remember.
Yes. Yeah. I grew up hunting and fishing and catching our own dinner and cleaning out, you know, I mean, I haven't done it in years because hunting's not as much of my passion as it was when I was a little girl. You know, that's something me and my dad did. So I can't necessarily say I could guide you through the cleaning process. But I mean, it was something I took pride in, you know, on the first deer that I ever shot and killed myself. You know, it was one of those things I said, okay, well, if I made it this far, I have to be the person to clean it. And there were several other times that I with the other deer for my parents and or for my dad and for my husband where I've helped clean their deer as well, but it's not something that at day and age I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to go clean a deer today. But but I at least got to learn that, you know, and same thing with the fish that we would kill, you know, catch and eat for dinner. You know, there were so many times that I was out there right beside my dad just scaling them and helping. So it's nice to have that in the background, knowing that if I absolutely had to, I could do it, you know?
Yeah. I wonder about that too. In fact, I want to get some of the folks, actually I'm hoping to get sponsors, you know, My Patriot Supply, you know, some of the prepper folks, some of the survival folks, because stuff happens, you know, in my own life, I've been through the New England blizzard of 78. I was in the San Francisco earthquake of 89, and I was here for Hurricane Sally in 2021, I think it was. You know, I sort of joke around with my friends, it's time I moved next to a volcano. I mean, I seem to have a pattern here, you know, but stuff happens. And I know, you know, but I know stuff happens, you know, and I've seen flooding around here, you know, with Hurricane Sally as well as the hurricane. And so we're in the natural world. And these folks, I think that, you know, that, you know, the man controls everything. And, you know, let me ask you this, having been out in nature and the power of nature, do you know folks that are absolutely, totally overwhelmed with this climate change belief that we can make legislation that if we stop driving our SUVs and drive electric cars, which derive their power from the same coal and oil, you know, and petroleum, that somehow the world is going to be a cooler place and that's a good thing. What do you do with folks like that?
I mean, luckily I haven't ran into any of them because that makes no sense that's the way that they're thinking. I mean, it's fathomed. I know that there was a way, I've heard it, you know, where we can power our gasoline by water and different engineering, but it falls into kind of like the big pharma companies, like then the government wouldn't have the control and they wouldn't have a way of making money. So, I mean, really it's just another way that the government has in the back of their head that, hey, well, let's make it all electric, make it harder and more controlling. It makes it easier for us to control the people even more. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's the stupidest thing that I've ever heard come up with it. And I mean, if it comes down to that, I guess I'll be back to that wagon and horse stage because I am not going to drive an electric vehicle. You know, it's either going to be my 2 feet or my horses and wagon.
We have a bill in the works. Actually, a friend of mine, Amber, who was on the show as our Constitution reporter, she's about, 18 at the time, and she's been off for a bit going to college, but I want to get her back just for one episode because it was her idea to do an electric car tax bill, and I want to add a $25,000 hazmat fee to every electric car and have the state of Florida charge what the federal government's giving for a subsidy. So if they're giving a $7,500 subsidy, then Florida should have a $7,500 electric car tax. And we'll call it the tax equalization or the tax equity or the electric car equity tax. or something like that.
Yeah.
You know. So, I mean, all these things, this is, and I think people forget just how much we can do with legislation. I was really impressed. Well, what did you think of this? I mean, we only have about a minute left, so, but with the folks who are talking about this woman out in Arizona, Laurie Cederstrom, who's already using our website, I had no idea. So the things that we do here, we really have no idea where they go. I got somebody using our website in Arizona to write legislation based on the stuff that we're teaching here. That was fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that and I heard that, and so that's incredible. I mean, and that's why it's important that we continue this, kind of like,
mm-hmm.
you know, the comment that I made on Fred's page. You know, it is nice to have this right at our hands, where we have the devices that we can talk to people all over the world, and we can come together and spread awareness and mm-hmm. be ourselves. So it is neat that it's getting that far, you know. And people are utilizing it. I'm sure it makes you feel really good about it, you know. Because
I feel fabulous. Are you kidding? It's why I did this. You know, I mean, that was the whole point. This is why, this is not out of ego. This is not out of, you know. I mean, we need fame and recognition solely to get the message out there and the bills out there.
Yeah.
You know, but I think we've got a chance with Bobby Kennedy now, with Judy Mikovits, who's personal friends of his, you know, that maybe Bobby will endorse, she calls him Bobby, so I guess I do, you know, maybe we'll endorse our vaccine product liability bill. That would be huge. Millions
yeah.
of people will then
yeah.
hear about that bill if it becomes part of the campaign. It should become part of the campaign. It could be yeah. one of the central issues of the campaign. Do you stand for vaccine product liability or not? That determines
mm-hmm.
whether you're a corporatist or an individual that believes all companies are equal and should be equal before the law and have equal liability for their products. That's a huge issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it is.
Yeah. So stick around for a while. It's going to be good fun here. But the other thing I was thinking, too, is that there are horse organizations around the country and around the world. You know, I mean, if you can contact some folks in Arabia about Arabians, wouldn't that be cool? We've got a Skype line.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want to start reaching out, I would start United States, Canada, Mexico, you know, horse folks, and see who wants to come on the show. Might be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I have
yeah.
Kate, who actually is opening up a sanctuary, and I just need to time it with her,
uh-huh.
which she's a little busy right now, but she said she'd love to come on the show. So she just opened
okay.
up a sanctuary for horses and animals in Peru. So,
oh, wow.
And then I have to do some work in Brazil. So it's definitely out there.
Okay, let's go to South America, too. Forget North America. Let's
yeah.
go to South America, too. I mean, why not? You know, wherever
yeah,
you want to go is fine
go.
With me. You know, whatever happens, happens, you know. So this
yep.
is this is what's going to be so fascinating. You know, I'd love to actually be interesting to expand the show a little bit. I'd love to hear about the Mustang population, what's going on with them, you know, Bureau of Land Management. I mean, you can, you know, there's a lot we can do with horses just in this country. You know,
yep.
you can do a thing on VW buses. How many of those are still out there? You know, and who, you know, mm-hmm. how many hippies are traveling? I mean, the possibilities are you know, only as limited as your imagination. And it's my imagination that there are no limits. Because I have a pretty big imagination. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's nice to be, you know, dreamers and moon chasers. It's definitely what I call myself. So,
You're a moon chaser? I like that.
Yeah.
We're going to form a group,
so,
you know, Candace and the – that'd be a great rock band, Candace and the Moon Chasers. There's your band.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Do you like that? Candace and the Moon Chasers. That's really catchy. So
yeah,
I got a band
catchy.
For you. See, I got a band for you. So now you just need the musicians and you know, a little more practice, and you're all set.
There we go.
So make a logo for that. I'm gonna be curious. You know, so get your art stuff together. Candace and the Moon Chasers. See, I see this like huge full moon, and a bunch of people. I don't know if you guys are running to it or you know, different faces. You know, you'll figure it out. But anyway, there's your band name.
Right.
What else can I do for you, Candace? Anything else while you're here?
I think that sums it up. I mean, another reminder for people that are local in our area or coming to visit Milton, Florida, trail season will be ending soon for a couple of months. So I'm filling up quickly in May. So mm-hmm. if y'all want that opportunity to ride with me and hang out with me, see the horses, get that special feel of nature, then you need to contact me. So my information is Believe the Journey Horse Services. You can find me on the website there, or you can find me through Facebook. Other social medias like TikTok and Instagram, you're going to find me through Cowgirl Candace. And again, I'm located in Milton, Florida, and our trails will stop the beginning of June, and I won't be back open until September.
Yeah, just because of the schedule, I'm going to be looking at September for me. So I want to come out to like, it's a little cooler, and I definitely wanted to do this and, you know, catch the fall breezes and all those kind of things. So we'll be talking. I figure if I got a horse reporter on the show, the least I can do is go ride. I mean, they'd be kind of stupid not to. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Let's talk next week. Or if something comes up during the week, you know, you need to come on and make an announcement, feel free. That's always possible. And we shall do it again. Thank you.
All right, Greg. Thank you. Have a good week.
I will. You too. Yeah, I'm inspired. I mean, just from what I heard today, I'm inspired. Things are only going to get better.
Yes.
Well, I'm off to Matt Gaetz's office. I'm going to go talk to him or his minions and see if I can get some recognition for the work that we're doing here. See if I can see if they'll call Trump to endorse our bills before Robert Kennedy does. Get a little rivalry going, see what I can stir up. You know me. It's you know, it's all part of the game. All right, Candace.
Yep.
Take care. Talk to you next week.
All right. All right.
Bye-bye. Goodbye. All right, so it's been an incredible week here. This has been busy. It's been fun. I've got Marco in the Netherlands. You know, we have Bianchi, who's with me most days, and all our great reporters, except for the last couple of days when I was on my own. That's a lot of talking. I need to rest my voice for until Monday. I've done enough talking today. But this has been fascinating. Marie Clark was on. Rebecca Charles will be back next Wednesday with a regular report on her on her website, Death by Hospital Protocol. So if you have a story, you know, that's where you want to go. Contact her at deathbyhospitalprotocol.com because we are going to stop these people. We are going to make them pay. We have a lot of work to do. Right here, our website is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. And apparently people are using that to learn how to write legislation, which is the whole reason we set it up in the first place. I have my Substack, gregpenglis.substack.com. And our contribution site is givesendgo.com/actionradio. All of these are on the broadcast page up at the very top where the notes are. But have yourself a great week. And we will do this again Monday, 7 a.m. Central Time, and we'll see you then.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine.
Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grave Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gravecare.com. That's G-R-A-I-T-H-K.
gracecare.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grace Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive, conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.